gamble is to gamble away from the vaccine and away from potential harm. Now, Jessica Rose, in her first paper, showed that the non-fatal reactions tend to be cardiovascular, neurologic, and immunologic. They tend to occur quickly after the shot. Again, a tight temporal relationship. And with Rose, she's a really tight epidemiologist, but virologist. She's made the case that we've completely fulfilled the Bradford Hill criteria for causality. We have a dangerous mechanism of action. We have a tight temporal relationship. We have internal consistency between death and the non-fatal events. We have external consistency because this is seen in the MHRA system, the yellow card system, and in the UDRA, the EMA system. We've basically got it. We have fulfilled Hill's tenets of causality. The vaccine is causing these events. There are new categories of diseases. This is vaccine-induced immune thrombocytopenic purpura. Look at the criteria. These are individuals who, sadly, after about 2 weeks, more likely with the adenoviral vaccines, develop a hemolytic anemia. They develop thrombosis at the same time, thrombosis in a whole variety of organs, including abdominal, visceral, venous outflow. This is in the peer-reviewed literature now. So, you know, we don't have to speculate on this. This is real. This paper's from Hypertension, which is one of the best papers, one of the best daughter journals of Circulation. Research Letters, stage 3 hypertension in patients developing the messenger RNA SARS-CoV-2 vaccination. A marked skyrocketing of blood pressure in some individuals, which is catastrophic. We've had somebody in our circles in Dallas, a young man who's 42, has had an aortic dissection. Laura Ingram has had a woman in her 70s who suffered this with an intracranial hemorrhage, and she came on and told her story. Many of you have hypertension. That's who, when you have baseline hypertension, you take a spin with this vaccine, this is what you're risking. We don't know who's going to have life-threatening, potentially fatal hypertensive events with the vaccine.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Hey, October 25th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I have a fantastic show planned for you today. One of these shows that's going to be sort of a debunker, right? I mean, every day we do this on this show. Every day we compile the information that continues to show you that you're being lied to. But today is special. Today, there's a compilation of things, some of it stemming from the information we were talking about just last show, but stepping on that to the next part of this. So none of this is old information. All of this is new. And all of it shows you that what we're dealing with is what I keep talking about, the pandemic of the injected, not just to counterbalance their claim with something else, but the fact that that's what the evidence is showing. And they're saying, no, that's not true. Because of our manipulated information, we're showing you from two states and two counties and certain things. You know, I'm being facetious, just grabbing numbers out of nowhere, but this, you'll see what I mean. It's ridiculous when we're looking at the full body, all the evidence, and it's clearly showing you that there's something at the very least that's wrong. It's not going the way they thought it would. On top of that, we have more information as we go through today that you'll find very, very interesting in regard to that illusion, in regard to how none of this stuff is happening the way they're telling you it is, in regard to the next booster. And on top of that, how we're seeing things like the evidence coming out from studies from the very people they tell you to trust, showing you that the vaccine is not possibly, but is clearly causing the symptoms of COVID-19. That they're then saying, well, we're going to call those long haul too. You have people telling them that they have long-haul COVID when they actually got the injection and proving that they never even had COVID. So how are we explaining that? This is something that is, I don't think anything we've been told in this topic is actually what's going on today. One of the reasons I think that is one of the earlier topics we're going to get into today about Pfizer, which I called Pfizer Trojan Horse. And I mean it exactly like that. What I believe we're looking at today is sort of a Pfizer or maybe just pharma in general that appears to be like the new NGO Trojan horse for the government, for the military-industrial complex, for the deep state, for the world order. I mean, who ultimately knows? We can all theorize based on the information, But I'm going to tell you what you're about to listen to, which we've already touched on briefly on her first segment. This is news from India. They're telling you that this what's happening with Pfizer is exactly what we used to see and still ultimately happening. Things like, I'm blanking on the names now, the NGOs we've talked about in the past, the ones that the U.S. government send abroad under the guise of fighting for human resources and fighting for freedom and helping people who are struggling and human rights, and all they do is become Trojan horses for regime change. James Corbett has touched on it quite a bit. List some of them off in the chat for me. I don't know why I'm blanking on them. It's been focused on COVID for such a while now that the foreign policy is losing the information. But there's a bunch of them. I can't drive me crazy. I can't remember them. But you guys list them off in the chat for me. All these NGOs that they've sent around the world that they're using as Trojan horses. And they'll even say themselves that they do what the CIA used to do in clandestine fashion so many years ago. And they're doing it today. Or just ultimately something that is becoming the new government structure, right? We've seen this World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, public-private partnership. Is that not what Pfizer and all these groups are ultimately becoming? This crossover between them becoming sort of an altruistic philanthropic vaccine entity that's not even close to what's actually happening. All of this is showing you the illusion behind USAID. Thank you. I was almost waiting for that to pop up. What USAID is one of the many that we've talked about many times before. Now, in any case, all of this is showing you the illusion that they're building in front of you from every possible angle. And the real takeaway here is that this is dangerous, not just for some, not just for the old. This is a dangerous concept, and exactly what Peter McCullough was saying, Dr. Peter McCullough, which is what I opened up with there, the clip. This is where I got that from. NED as well, National Endowment for Democracy. Thank you guys for being an intelligent audience and keeping me going. These groups have been used in exactly that way. Now, whether you realize that or not, they have been. They've been used as a way to funnel in government entities, military entities, to create regime change under a guise of fighting for those very people they then destroy. Now, this is what I believe Pfizer is becoming, almost is at this moment. Now, on that note, though, the product they're creating is also very, very dangerous. And what he listed off in the beginning is exactly what we are seeing. And we're going to essentially prove that with scientific studies, peer-reviewed research, and other expert testimony. You know, all that fake news conspiracy stuff that they don't want you to listen to. So make sure you check out this account. A lot of interesting things. Some of the things I've seen that I'm like, not exactly what I think I would share. But good stuff coming from this account. And that's a great little clip that he shared there. So I always like to give a shout out to those that were the original location from which I find these things. Now, before I get into everything else, as always, I want to point out a few things when we get started here. We just had the activation tour in Franklin. 29 city tour that Derek Burrows and the Conscious Resistance just carried out, and that's just commendable. Worked his butt off. Honored to be a part of it in Franklin. Had a great turnout, as I said, the march and the event, 70 to 80, so many people showed up. It was fantastic. Now, for those in Franklin, as I said on the tweet, just know that the majority of businesses in downtown support your right to make your medical decisions and are standing up for you. T-Lab is one of them. You are not alone. Franklin's a good place to be right now. That doesn't mean it won't change, but a lot of the local businesses are actively standing up and saying, you know what, no matter what happens, we are not closing down again. We're not forcing. And you know what, a lot of these businesses there, they may actually believe that you should be wearing a mask or so on, but they allow you to make your choice. And we should be standing with people like that. Just because we have different opinions doesn't mean we're on the wrong side or on the opposite side of each other. They want you to think that. There's a lot of people in the middle area that may think this is real or fake, or may think vaccines are good, or may think you should wear a mask, but all agree that you should get to decide. That is the line we need to draw, guys. We are all in this together, not to use their ridiculous term, because that's the truth and it's what they want you to think in regard to the government and the people with them. No, we as the people are in this. They as the government are using this and doing it to us. We need to stand together and push back. A great event, some great people. And we had a couple performances by Derek and myself. I thought it was a really great turnout. Now, on that note, this was somebody who recorded the speech here, my partial speech. I think it was like 12, 15 minutes. Check it out if you'd like. I'll include this in the show notes. And you guys have heard my music in the past, but I played both songs. Some of you might have not heard the second one. Oh, and I did want to point this out. I brought my pirate flag that says, "Don't tread on me," to point out up there. I thought that was pretty cool. The pirate streams and so on. And the idea that it's kind of a, you know, we are the modern day pirates, if you will. There is kind of an analogy there a story, not to go long into it, but the historical concept is the pirates weren't necessarily what they were made out to be. That was at that time, that was a version of propaganda. A lot of them were naval officers and people in the military, in the Navy, that ended up being cast out by their government, exactly like we see today, who said, well, you know what? Screw it. Then we're going to make our own way. And a lot of them were not, I mean, there were bad people like there are anywhere, but they weren't all the way that they made them out to be in the premise, the beginning of it was not necessarily what they made it out to be. They demonized them because of what they were. Think about how relevant that is today. Now, getting into the beginning of the conversation, starting a little bit of foreign policy, I wanted to make a couple of quick points. Ooh, just remembered something. I'm so glad I didn't forget that. Right before I went live, I haven't even sent this to Robert yet. I'm sure he's already seen it, but I want to grab this real quick because I grabbed it just for the show. Oh, of course, I have to stretch out my window here. There we go. Now, here is what I want to start with. Oops, that's the wrong one. Of course. Here we go. Because I just saw this. This is important to include to start out because this just happened just now. Breaking news. Officials say Iran. Oh, shocking. Iran blamed behind the drone attack on the U.S. base in Syria. Go, that's news, isn't it? The same old thing they say over and over with no evidence? That's fantastic. Now, is Iran capable of a drone strike? Of course they are. Is Iran capable of striking a base in Syria? Yes. Would they do it? I'm sure they would. Now, have they? No. And there's no logical reason for them to do so. It's the stupidest possible military strategic move ever. But that's always what happens, right? Look at Assad doing the one dumb thing that'll let them invade Syria, right? It's the same nonsensical thing that they want you to believe because all bad guys are crazy madmen. That's what they want you to think. And all bad guys, all Iran, just the whole thing, all bad guys, right? The whole thing. Even though they go, we're fighting for the Iranian people, and then they starve them to death, and they hurt them, and they attack them. It's so silly to see this continue. Now, I would also note, just on a counterpoint, that maybe Iran would do this right now because they know that it makes no sense. And that would give them some sort of cover because I'm going to be, well, that doesn't make sense. But it just doesn't ultimately add up because they know they're going to say this. They're going to blame them anyway. And there's no benefit to this. On top of that, we know that this does very clearly benefit who? Israel and the United States. It gives them exactly the kind of leeway they want to say, look, they did that. Now we're going to do one more thing that we want to do. Now, did this even happen? Possibly not. We've seen them completely lie in fake events just like this. Now, understand, this is just hypothetical theorizing. I just saw this today. I'm basing it off historical actions from the government, from Iran, from all sorts of things like exactly this that pan out and later are shown to be not what they said it was. Right? I mean, it's just so frustrating. Now, I just wanted to get that out there so you guys saw this. Robert's already been talking about this. He's already wrote about the last article where they lied about what happened. I'm sure he's going to follow up on this one, so stay tuned. But this all leads to justifying their military actions in the Middle East, specifically targeted against Iran. 7 countries, 5 years, right? Iran was the last one on that list. They're still shooting for it. Don't worry. Now, one more small thing. I might have already mentioned this, but I just want to point something frustrating out is Yemen, you know, that completely occupied territory where they're starving people to death, but nobody talks about it anymore because COVID-19 took over the world and myself included. It's clearly the biggest thing I've ever seen happen, but this is still going on as well. Recognize that in the middle of all this, they haven't stopped doing that. So it's funny how we care about all the people in Africa, but we're going to keep starving Yemen while they're in a pandemic, they say. Right? Just their logic within their narrative, the argument, right? We're all in a pandemic, but we're going to keep starving those people. Because that makes sense, right? Remember when the U.S.-led Saudi coalition, oh, well, the point was, the Saudi coalition, the U.S.-led Saudi coalition, because that's what it really is, 180 Yemen rebels killed in south of Marib. Okay, that's great to hear from the illegally occupied nation that is doing so, that's, you know, an open authoritarian country. Remember when the U.S.-led Saudi coalition bombed that school bus full of rebels, they claimed? The one that Jim Carrey made a cartoon about, and that's the only reason people talked about it outside of us. Using U.S. bombs, by the way. Then it turned out to be only children going to school. Remember that? Remember, they did it 2 more times after that, but nobody talked about it because Jim Carrey didn't make 2 more cartoons. Yeah, that's a story. Hashtag context. This is disgusting kind of stuff that now just falls under the radar because Saudi Arabia just goes, we just killed rebels and probably murdered a bunch of families in their homes while they were sleeping because that's what continues to happen in Yemen. And the U.S. government's completely a part of this. In fact, leading that charge. Like, we need to understand this. Now, on a kind of middle ground between foreign policy and domestic policy, as they drive it towards you as the focus of their policy, as Thomas Massey points out, I just want to make this comment that he sees and basically made the comment about exactly what I took from this. He played this in front of A.G. Garland. refused to comment. Remember, he said, no comment. I can't comment on ongoing investigation. This was the guy who was going, let's go inside the Capitol. And then he was there that same day going, now let's go in. And then he just disappeared and never got arrested. And nobody sought him out. Gee, that's suspicious. And here's where they chant, Fed, 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 Fed. Everyone calls him out. Isn't that weird? Right? As he says, make no mistake. Had there been DOJ, FBI assets in the crowd, which there were, by the way, we know this, it's been admitted, or in the Capitol on January 5th and 6th, AG Merrick Garland would have said so. Had there been no assets. Instead, he refused to answer. The DOJ could put out a statement tomorrow, but they won't. What does that tell you? My point exactly. When I watched that live, I told you, if he had the opportunity, he could have said no, but they were there, so we can't comment on the ongoing investigation. It's pretty clear. This is, you're being manipulated from January 6th. All this is part of a big push for something alarming, and we all see it. Now, moving this over into COVID-19, here is Joe Biden saying for the 45th time in the last so many months, a fake statement that we all know is fake, that I'm going to continue to prove throughout the show is fake, because we all know that you can still spread it when you have the injection. One or two or whatever, you can still transmit whatever they're telling you is happening. That's right out of the CDC information, which we'll show you again. But here's Joe Biden telling you, you can't do that. You can't spread it to people if you've got the injection because Biden said so. Well, guess what? That is false. Unequivocally false. And Robert Malone also points that out. Yeah, I love his fact check. Fake news. That's not a joke. It's easy to look up. So we're going to go, if you think I'm lying, wait and stay and listen to the show. We'll prove it to you. But what's crazy is that he can stand up there and say that. Now, does he not know that? That's pretty alarming. Well, they let him say it. Isn't that fake news, dangerous misinformation? Well, as I said, doesn't that make him a domestic terrorist, according to his recent executive order on the topic that specifically points to vaccine misinformation? Yeah, except they get to choose which one, right? So he can blatantly lie about something we can prove in 10 seconds, but that's okay. We can state things and show you the scientific data to back it up, and we get censored as fake news. Nothing new, just recognizing the absurd clown world that we're living in right now. On another note from Biden, I just thought this was sort of ridiculous. Guess what? He was just about to give you all of it about JFK, but then COVID happened. I mean, sort of ongoing. So COVID, we can't do the thing we were going to do just now. Isn't that interesting? What a self-serving claim. I made the joke when I tweeted this out. I said, oh man, that JFK truth must be stuck in one of those shipping containers. Maybe Corn Pop got to it first, right? I mean, this is just stupid. Or did we all believe he was going to give us all the goods? Did we all believe Trump was going to? Clearly not, guys. This is a ploy. Maybe to get you to look over there for 2 seconds. Maybe just to get you to think they're trying to help. It's all nonsense. They are never going to tell you because they probably took him out. I say probably just, I believe that quite strongly. But the point is, blaming COVID. What in the world does COVID-19 have to do with you releasing documentation for people that would take an instant? I mean, that's just silly. But of course, if you can blame COVID, why not? Works for everything else, doesn't it? One last point before we jump into what's next. Oh, just the start. One of the interesting points I want to make about the percentages, and we get into this data right after that, is a clip that somebody shared that I think is really relevant to where we are, not just from Biden, but just this hatred, this vitriol that one side has for the other. And that's coming from the president down, because that's what they need. They're desperate to keep you divided, guys. If they get you thinking that one side, the point is, if we never cross that line, I said the same thing in my speech at the rally, we will fail. If we are not willing to cross a party line, a religious line, a racial line, we will fail, because we are all, it's the people that are on the side of us and fighting for your right to choose are all walks of life everywhere. Not just left, not just right, not just black, not just white, but it's everybody. And I think the majority, and I think that's damn clear today. But watch this clip, so and I'll make some comments afterward, because this is, it just shows you the kind of, I mean, how can you even think a president, why would a president act like this to somebody who is there, somebody who is one of his constituents, right? Now, I mean, this is only audio, but it sounded to me like he said, you're full of S, right? Family-friendly show. I'm not going to cuss as little as I can anyway. So listen again, that's just the way it starts. Now, that's not the most important part, but I just was starting off like this, and you can see his assistant jump in like, whoa, and he's like, no. And the whole time she is pissed off. I think she's his handler, right? And he just finally said, no, you know what? I need to talk to this guy. Obviously, he made a mistake. So watch what happens. Oh, sorry, and I'll let it play after this, because what he said was, to set the table, is he's reading something, by the way, about Biden talking about taking away our guns, and that's not a hypothetical thing. You can look it up. It's very clear. He's talking about that. He's talked about it many times, in fact. And so he says he's full of S.
Support the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. To the very beginning, I have a shotgun, I have a foot game, a throw game, my son's hunt, guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon. I'm not taking the gun away at all. You need 100 rounds and when you
look at that. Look at that. He just made contact with that guy. Are you serious? Like, if that wasn't the president, I mean, I don't care who you are. You don't poke me in the chest. Like, that's confrontational. Do you really think this old man would feel the courage to do something like that if he wasn't Biden and the president of the United States? That's crazy. Not only that, if he did that to Biden, well, that's assault, isn't it? That just drove me crazy, by the way. And the guy gets upset.
I'm not taking the gun away at all. You need 100 rounds.
And when you were in
right
when you said you're going to take our guns,
I did not say that. I did not say that.
Yes, he did.
It's a viral video like the other ones you put out because they were
lying. Your voice.
Whoa, look at that. He almost grabbed his neck. Did you see that? I mean, look, I know it's hard to... It sounded like he just said, I would go outside with you. Like, this is Biden losing it right here. Watch. What, look, and the way he reaches for his neck, I mean, this is alarming.
Your voice...
And then that's the most telling part of the whole thing. You're working for me, man. I'm not working for you. Oh, that's great. Oh, good to know that the president doesn't believe he's working for the American people. Now, he would sure as hell say different on a podium, wouldn't he? See, Biden doesn't even understand the difference, but you can clearly tell by watching him pretend to hold a gun, which I've shown that picture before, where he's quite confused about which hand should be where. He doesn't understand. This is why they call them AR-15, or this is why they call them assault rifles. That's not even actually what that's a term politically made up. Yep. Right. So that is a real engagement, not scripted, and that's what it actually looks like. A hostile president who is poking people in the chest and screaming at them and saying, I'll take you outside. That's what Biden is, right? That's what it looks like when you catch him candidly. He probably didn't know he was on film. That's disgusting to me. And you know what? That's probably no different than pretty much every other one of them. Just so we're clear on this, it's not some, oh, Biden, bad guy because he's on the left, right? Let's not be children. It's obviously all of our government. And that's how they see you. That's the point, guys. That's the point. Now, on the note of the tracker of COVID injections, I just want to make one point on this. Like I said the other day, it says, first of all, they're claiming 44.8%. Just so you're clear that even just in dose percentage, and I'll make a point about that in a second, you're the majority of the world right now. The majority of the world is unvaccinated, uninjected in terms of the COVID-19 injections. Just remember that. This is clearly a worldwide thing. Isn't it funny how it skipped over from being like, oh, you know, we need this much percentage in all your locations because that's herd immunity. And then people got there and they're like, well, we're not yet. We don't. That doesn't count. We need the whole world. It's like, oh, weird. Exactly what we told you would happen. So until that quarter of the world over there and that one African country that never even got any, we're all still in danger. Yeah, shocking. That's a perfectly self-serving argument. 44.8%, though, you're the majority. But on top of that, what I want to point out is something you're going to see somewhere else in the show today. Enough doses have now been administered to fully vaccinate this percentage. That does not mean that 44.8% of the world is vaccinated. It means they've given enough doses to have done that. So all these people getting third doses and third, fourth doses in Israel, right? Right now, they're continuing to add that up and claiming this percentage. Now, they're being clear, at least to the point where saying, well, this is just enough doses to have done that. But I asked the question about other locations. Because even in the CDC, that's what they're kind of leaning into now. This many doses to have done that. Now, if we keep going forward on these third doses and fourth doses and so on, and they keep going, well, we've given this many doses to have been vaccinated 90%, 130%. At what point do we start asking ourselves whether it's just stuck at 50? Half the country is, and the rest of us are saying no, and they're giving multiple doses to the rest of them, and they're pretending like we have 90% of the country injected. Something to think about. Playing with data is what they've been doing this whole damn time. Also, totally expected from the World Economic Forum, fear, anger, and sadness are natural emotions, and we should embrace them too. Now, look, I'm not arguing that those aren't natural emotions, but why in the world would we embrace being angry, fearful, and sad? Those are not natural emotions that you should lean into. Those are emotions that are natural that come because of hardship and problems and pain. So that's exactly the point. That's where everybody's, right? We are all in a situation where most of us, even people on the side, on their side, believing vaccines are good, and we should all, they're upset, they're sad, they're anxious, they are nervous, they are angry and fearful. And so they're going, yeah, it's all normal. Just accept it. That's how you're going to feel now. Fear, anger, sadness, it's all normal. Just embrace it. Good God. This is the same group saying, guess what? 2030, you own nothing. You have no privacy, and you've never been happier. That's directly from the World Economic Forum, Forbes, and everyone else put it out there. Fear, anger, and sadness. That's just the normal now. Just get lean into it. Yeah, that's just very telling. Now, to start off with one of the bigger points, this is really important, and somebody just shared this with me. Now, this is the PCR emergency authorization, but it's the newer version. This is the, ask yourself why we're still emergency authorizing things when we have an approved injection out there, or the fact that we're not even technically in an emergency based on any metric anywhere in the world outside of their bloated numbers that don't really exist in the real world. But even then, you're still looking at a statistic that's well below what they told you was an emergency before we ever got here. We've shown you that with the U.S. government's own pandemic chart that still puts us, even at the peak of all this, about a one or a two. But we forget all of that once COVID changed everything we ever knew, right? But the point here is that this is your emergency document. This is about the PCR test, right? That's and the point is this is effective as of 7/21/21, right? So this is number looks like the revision number 7. Okay, so this is important to understand. This is not the old one from way back when they first did this. This is as of this year, as of 7/21. Here's what it says, the most important line in this, okay? And see, sit just right down here in case you want to see it again. Effective 7/21. Here's what it says. Since no quantified virus isolates of the 2019 SARS-CoV-2 were available for the CDC use at the time the test was developed and this study conducted. So they just said very clearly, and by the way, the idea of having no quantified virus isolates, we pointed that out right in the beginning with the Pfizer information, and they said, well, that's because it's too early. Well, how about now? How about ask yourself why in the world it makes any sense in the anywhere to, for the CDC of all places, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, we just like to leave that part off, right? The CDC, how is it possible they don't have access to a virus isolate in the middle of 2021? Think about that. So just so it's clear again, they say since no quantified virus isolates were available at the time they made the test, and when they did this study, it went up until, so I mean, just basically in the 7/21, 7. I'll read the sentence all the way through. Since no quantified virus isolates were available for the CDC at the time this test was developed and the study conducted, assays designed for detection of SARS-CoV-2 RNA were tested with characterized stocks of in vitro transcribed full-length RNA of known titer spiked into diluted consisting of a suspension of human A549 cells and viral transport medium to mimic clinical specimen. Now, don't you think we have a right to know that? Don't you think we have a right to know that they didn't use the sample of what they're telling you this is testing for? And they just go, we'll just make something up to mimic that and model it on that and then use that test and pretend like we know for sure that it's working, even though we never had any isolates of the virus to make it work. Or on top of that, how in the world the CDC doesn't have access to that isolate, probably because it's not there. That's probably because it's an obvious answer that it was not isolated like we've been telling you from the very beginning of this conversation. Now, that could mean that it's never there to begin with. That could mean that viruses don't exist, and that's all possible. And I've done discussions on all that stuff, but it could also mean that whatever they did when they died, if they hypothetically did isolate it, whatever that showed you was something they didn't want you to see, such as the fact that maybe there was evidence that it was made in a lab. Just a thought. I'm leaning far more towards the idea in this case that it wasn't. How in the world they wouldn't have it if that's the case? It's probably more likely at this point that they didn't ever, we haven't proven that it's there. Now, here again was the CDC from China saying exactly that. And I've told you this many times. They themselves that we didn't isolate. Now, that doesn't mean that it was never, but this at a time was early 2021, I believe, where they say the problem was we never isolated the virus. Nobody likes to talk about this stuff.
And why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
It's pretty clear. So as we're staring at this again, they didn't have it. So the two main points is they don't have it in the middle of 2021, which tells you something, and they made a test without having that. I don't know how in the world that makes sense. Now, the reason nobody knows about this outside of the person who sent it to me and the people that have already talked about it is because they don't want you to know. Now, in a normal, honest world, that stuff would be a huge deal. And they would say, oh my gosh, they're working off, they're flying off the cuff here, right? They're just guessing along the way. Well, that's what they've been doing a lot of the time, especially when we talk about the mix and match again, just a brief point about that today, seeing as how they just approved that. Yeah, go ahead and jam those different substances into your arm and just, as long as you get an injection, we'll call it square. No worries, right? Some of them are viral vectors. Some of them are mRNA. Some of them have different cooling temperatures. Some of them have different times between shots. Some of them are just flat out different technologies, but no worries because you got the shot. You're good. You're on our side. Pat on the head. It's disgusting. Now, this brings us to one of the most important parts of this show. This clip is unreal. Now, I'm going to do my best to not to interject. There's going to be a couple points, but I want you to really hear what this is talking about. And we've already covered this before. You might have recognized the clip, the setup, this show, the WION. We talked about her exact segment that she references in this clip months ago. She follows up on it to really drive this point home. And this is really important. Like, this really floored me when I watched this all the way through. I'm thinking, okay, this is real. This is not just, this is the window into what's happening behind the scenes, like in a foreign policy sense. What Pfizer was going around the world doing, both with the people that are on the U.S. government side and those that aren't, and then wondering how that might be tweaked to sabotage them. So then all of a sudden, when they don't meet their requirements, guess what? Pfizer gets control of basically their country. Now, maybe that's just Pfizer capitalizing. I don't know why that's even logical that a pharmaceutical company would be leveraging against entire nations and telling governments what to do, unless there's far more power behind them than just a pharma company. And I think we all see that developing. So let's watch this.
Talking about common good, Wuhan virus vaccines are supposed to be a global public good. But what happens when a vaccine manufacturer starts bullying? Governments are silenced, supplies are halted, and profits take precedence over saving lives. I'm not describing a hypothetical situation here. I am describing what Pfizer is doing. The American pharma giant, it is doing all of this. It is bullying countries to submit to its demands. We first reported about this back in February this year. While countries like India are sending free vaccines to poorer nations, there are companies like Pfizer which are bullying governments. Pfizer asked to be compensated for the cost of any future lawsuits. Pfizer wanted Argentina to put, and listen to this, put its bank reserves, its military bases, and its embassy buildings at stake as collateral. These are Pfizer's demands. Look at this. Number one, Brazil waives the sovereignty of its assets abroad in favor of Pfizer. That the rules of the land.
How is that even? So, I can't even believe that. Like waiving your sovereign rights. I mean, this, and guys, this is, we've already gone over this. Like this is something that's been openly discussed, not the nitty gritty of what the contract actually resolves to, but the fact that these contracts exist. We've covered this on our show. So if you're giving up your sovereignty, how does that even make sense in the context of a pharmaceutical contract? There's something far more nefarious happening here.
Be not applied on Pfizer.
Right. Think about that. Laws of the land. Like, so again, think about, as we're going through this, think about this in the context of what your, what a government, right? Let's just say the US government, the Israeli government. Let's just say the UK government, any of these governments that have been involved in the regime change efforts. What if it was them and they were having some kind of a shell game of power and they wanted to take advantage, like let's say wanted a regime change in a certain country and they're using Pfizer to cover their actions. Ask yourself what they would be trying to ask for. And then realize it's a perfect wish list for what those governments would be asking for. Waive sovereignty of its assets abroad.
Number one, Brazil waives the sovereignty of its assets abroad in favor of Pfizer.
And the lies of the laws of the land don't apply. Wasn't that interesting? So then you can take actions over there that may be violating their laws. But you know what? Not for us, though. We're above the law.
That the rules of the land be not applied on Pfizer. Number three, that Brazil take into consideration a delay in delivery. Number four, that Pfizer is not penalized for it, for a delay in delivery. And number five, in case of any side effects, Pfizer be exempted from all civil liability.
Right, and we've seen this. They're not accountable for anything. Now, this was on February 24th, 2021. We talked about this when this came out. And this is verifiable. None of this is easy. This contracts were put out, some were leaked, and this is very clear. Now, Brazil was a focal point of that. Now, Brazil is obviously basically just the vassal state of the U.S. government. So it's interesting that they just handed this over. But there's other countries that are clearly resisting. Now, think about the other countries like, say, Africa and some of these other countries that were pressured, manipulated. Suddenly, we had leaders just up and die for weird, strange reasons, right? There's far more going on here than we realize. Remember the Belarus situation, where he openly told us, he said, guys, the IMF is trying to bribe me with almost $1 billion to do what they want me to do around COVID. We have all the information in front of us, guys. We are just about being willing to look at it, to understand what you're seeing.
8 months have passed since we reported this. Pfizer has not changed. It is still putting profits above public health. It is still forcing governments to bend to its will. An advocacy group has thrown up more details of what Pfizer does. It has accessed some confidential contracts of Pfizer. And we have a copy. These contracts are with 9 countries and blocks, and the details are shocking. Desperate countries are being forced to make humiliating concessions to Pfizer. We went through the entire report. We found 6 very important points worth highlighting. Number one, Pfizer has the right to silence governments. It has forced countries to not talk about the deals they strike for shots. Number two, Pfizer controls the donations of its shots, not the country that buys them. Pfizer will decide where the shots go. Number three, Pfizer has secured an intellectual property waiver for itself, and this clause is particularly disturbing. If Pfizer is accused of intellectual property theft, governments will pay, not the company. Number four.
Think about that. That's incredible. Right, I know. I can't stand the Powered by Lexus in the corner. Don't look at that. Screw that company. But the point is that the government is on the hook, so Pfizer gets caught for intellectual property. And remember, the whole patents conversation we've already talked about. The whole beginning of this thing was super murky, using patents they weren't allowed to use, but because it was an emergency, everything just got jammed through. And now if something else happens, the governments have to pay for it. The governments have to go to court and defend the Pfizer on the, I mean, that this is outrageous. And it shows you that there's something far more powerful, because I mean, why would these governments be doing this? Maybe some of them truly believe they need this, but some of them don't, and say yet are still being strong-armed into this. This is mafioso kind of stuff. This is exactly what we've been seeing from the U.S. government historically, and throughout all these events we've been seeing. I mean, look at things like going back to Prohibition, things that were since after that, where we've discussed the concept of how the mob was a huge part of that and how possibly that was just never went away, right? There's a really obvious tactic here, the strong-arming, the manipulation, the occupation. You could see these as obvious mafioso tactics, or they're just all criminals. And one gets labeled as such, and one, you know, that's the bad guy, as we do the same thing. Either way, far more happening.
If there are disputes, private arbitrators and not public courts will decide on them. Number five, Pfizer can go after state assets to secure its compensation. And number six, Pfizer calls the shots on all key decisions. It decides delivery timelines and more.
Now, there's a bunch of points she's going to get into here. Now, that's important in regard to calling the key shots. I'm questioning whether there's something far more nefarious going on in regard to each individual location, right? If they're super strict on what you can do and where and how, and you can't take shots from over there, you can only take the ones we give you. It seems to suggest that they might be testing these differently on different locations. They're openly saying, look, Israel's big Pfizer lab, we're testing on all of them. They're telling you that. So is there something different happening in each location?
These are very serious revelations. I'll give you some more details. Number one, Pfizer is silencing governments. How? Through contracts. These airtight contracts are at the center of everything. They can silence governments in ways you can't even imagine. Look at what happened in Brazil. Pfizer agreed to supply its Wuhan virus vaccines to Brazil. And it sneaked in this clause in the agreement to force Brazil to not share any specifics about its deal with Pfizer. Let me read it out for you. This is what it says. The Brazilian government is prohibited from making any public announcement concerning the existence, subject matter, or terms of the agreement, or commenting on its relationship with Pfizer without the prior written consent of the company. In other words, Brazil cannot talk about the Pfizer deal until it gets an approval from Pfizer in writing.
Wow.
This basically is a private company muzzling a government.
Now, ask yourself why they would be so concerned about revealing what's going on inside those contracts. This is why. They're well aware that this is unprecedented. Not even just unprecedented. This is a power grab. Like, we're watching a power grab from an odd position. That's why I'm questioning whether Pfizer is just it's pretty clear that Pfizer is some kind of a backhanded way of manipulating what they've always been trying to accomplish. I mean, if they're hiding the contract from you, how does that even remotely suggest that this is something honest or transparent?
And that's not all. Pfizer also gets to decide who'll get the shot.
That's important.
Suppose someone wants to donate Pfizer shots to Brazil. Can they do it? They cannot. The Pfizer agreement restricts Brazil from accepting donations. No one can donate Pfizer vaccines to this country. They cannot use the Pfizer shot until they buy it.
Now, see, what that shows you is a very clearly controlled flow. So they buy it, Pfizer can send it to them. No, but you can't take those free ones from a country they're just going to give them to you. Why not? There's a control there because maybe there's something different in those. And I'm just hypothetically throwing this out there. Oh, conspiracy theory, right? There's obviously a possible concern there based on what we've already been talking about and all the real world data and all the things we've proven. We should be asking whether Pfizer is lying yet again. For the 78th time for their tracker we've shown you for $4 billion in crimes. If they're not allowing someone to send one over, you can't buy it from somewhere else. Why? Is not their choice? Well, no longer once they sign that contract, because there's some kind of controlled thing going on there. That's all I'm saying. Me theorizing about why is just my thoughts. Come to your own conclusions. But there's something strange there on why they wouldn't be allowed to take a donation from somebody else.
What happens if Brazil does not comply with these rules? The consequences will be serious. Let me quote from the report again.
Sorry, one more thought on that is that, you know, think about it like a study, like a control, right? If you're putting something in these people and all of a sudden they buy something different from a different location that maybe is different in some way or whatever, well, that would ruin what they're trying to look at, what they're trying to find out, what they're testing. Just a thought. That's the only thing that makes sense to me in that regard.
Does not comply with these rules. The consequences will be serious. Let me quote from the report again. If Brazil were to accept donated doses without Pfizer's permission, it would be considered an incurable material breach of their agreement, allowing right. Pfizer to immediately terminate the agreement. Upon termination, Brazil would be required to pay the full price for any remaining contracted doses.
So, you know, $1 million or $1 billion fine for accepting a donation for the same supposedly same substance? Yeah, because that perfectly makes sense.
So Brazil will have to cuff up the entire payment, and Pfizer won't even have to supply the full consignment of Wuhan virus shots. What happens if someone accuses Pfizer of stealing its vaccine technology, of intellectual property theft? The government will be forced to defend Pfizer. It's unbelievable. We had to read this twice to let it sink in. And guess what? At least four countries have been forced to protect Pfizer's patent. Meaning these governments are defending Pfizer for intellectual property theft. While the company is free to use anyone's intellectual property as it pleases. Colombia is one of these victims. I'll explain with an example. Suppose a domestic vaccine maker or any pharma company in Colombia goes to court and they accuse Pfizer of infringing their vaccine patent. Who will be the one fighting that case? Not Pfizer. Even though they're the accused party, it's not Pfizer and their lawyers who will be in court. It will be the Colombian government. The government will have to defend Pfizer. And if they lose the case, it will be the Colombian government that will have to pay the settlement, not Pfizer.
Wow.
What if these governments want to get out of these tough contracts? They won't be able to sue Pfizer at home. The matter will go to a secret panel of three private arbitrators in New York. Pfizer will be tried as per New York law and not the laws of the land where it sells vaccines.
Wow.
And these countries
will again,
pay-
that's the full circle of that point, right? That's the full circle of that point where now you're telling. So not only are.
And where it sells vaccines.
Right. So I saw a message pop up and I lost my train of thought. The point is that they're now the law of the land. So you're using U.S. law to dictate what these other group like. So doesn't that speak to the main point of who might be behind what they're trying to use this for? I truly believe that's what I'm seeing here. This is a power grab pushed on by secret government entities, likely the U.S. government behind them, to achieve the same things they're trying to achieve. They're using this to stick their fingers in other countries that wouldn't probably otherwise allow it.
These countries will.
That's obviously my opinion.
Pay heavily if they lose an arbitration. Pfizer can ask a government to shift control of state assets to compensate for losses. What kind of assets are we talking about here? Practically anything that a sovereign government owns. Foreign bank accounts, foreign investments, commercial property, state-owned airlines, even oil companies. Pfizer can take over any or all of these from a government. Basically, everything happens on Pfizer terms once a country decides to buy its vaccine. Even the delivery of shots is decided by the company. In Brazil, in Albania, in Colombia, Pfizer gets to decide the delivery timetable for vaccines, and the countries will have to agree to whatever they're given, whenever they're given. Pfizer, of course, gets to decide the price. It sets the delivery timelines. It accepts accountability for nothing. And in case someone sues the company, it's the government that foots the bill for the damages, not Pfizer. There is no other way to describe Pfizer's business practices. This is vaccine terrorism. Vion is now available in your country.
I agree with that. Now, you could maybe decide to use a different word, right? I mean, vaccine, like I'm more so feeling like a mafioso tactic here, strong-arming people. But I mean, when you're doing it from behind a loaded weapon, ultimately the threat of that there, or how would you put this? A financial regime change, essentially being driven in by a company under the guise of helping you. I mean, you could call it that, vaccine terrorism. It's a very strong term, but it very clearly seems to be the same concept that I'm feeling from this. It's quite alarming. So just thinking about that as we go forward, make sure we're considering what might actually be happening here, whether or not we're watching this transition from even from the concept of the World Economic Forum, from the classical understanding we have of how these things work, even though it's probably not even true or accurate, to the public-private partnership world governance concept. And now we're seeing it happen through a guise of health. It's everywhere. It's pretty much everywhere you can look. Now, we're going to talk about that in a moment as we get into coming up right after this point in regard to the Public Health of England, which now I touched on. I wasn't understanding what was happening until somebody let me know that they stopped using Public Health of England, and now they have a security health agency. Because that doesn't tell you exactly what's happening, does it? Exactly. We're moving from Public Health of England to Health Security Agency, because that's not an ominous kind of thing. We're transitioning that way. Public health is the new security state. We've been telling you this from the very beginning. As Whitney Webb coined, your body is the new battlefield. It's pretty easy to see. Now, on that note, I wanted to point out something that somebody sent to me in a comment, and I really appreciated this because this is something I kind of missed. They say they're basically saying the chart we've showed, and I'm going to make this point from the chart in 1 second, discussed under 21 days, over 21 days, under 14 days, but they missed the after, basically 21 days post, or excuse me, basically after the second shot, right? Where is the 14 days after shot two? Because that's the most important part, right? Even they'll tell you that the side effects are much worse after the second shot. So it's interesting that they just kind of, they go before one shot, after one shot, before two shot, and then go and everybody else. Well, that's interesting. And their point is that missing category labeled as unvaccinated? Well, yes, we know that's how this is working. They give you this really weird time window, very specific and very short, and you're vaccinated in there, but everywhere else you're unvaccinated. Like, and the same thing is after 6 months. So you have this weird window of about, I argue 3 to 6 months based on what we're going to talk about again from Israel and what we've already seen on the documents. Regardless, that's it. Anywhere after that, so all these people that got injected back in the beginning of the year, technically speaking, on their own information, they're no longer fully vaccinated. Here, we're going to see, again, that there's a time window that they even left out that speaks volumes to what we're talking about. Now, here's the thing I just talked about. This isn't the part we're going to get into today. We're talking about new information, but I wanted to show you on the one we just discussed. Now, this was, again, attendance to emergency care and deaths in regard to Delta in England from February 1st to September 12th. Going right to death, specifically, deaths within 28 days of a positive specimen, going to all cases, 2,542. Now, these categories, again, you've got 21 days before, 21 days after shot one, then you've got 14 days before dose two. Okay, well, what about 14 days after? Right? Wait, am I misreading that? Actually, now that I think about it, make sure I'm always mixing up the... Right. No. So it's the same thing, right? I mean, where is the, regardless of the point, the point is that there's a category there of people who are after dose two, which is the highest part. And we showed you already 1,613 to 722. And that's just fully vaccinated, as they call it, versus unvaccinated. That is 63% of the total. Now, regardless of any of the caveats to, well, there's different groupings and there's more people on this side than that side. Yes, those things matter. But all we're pointing out, based on everything they're saying, is that right now, with most of these people injected, you have more people dying who are injected. Now, you could argue that, yes, that's expected because you would get, which doesn't make sense when you really stand back and think about it. Because if it's working the way they say it's working, well, we shouldn't be seeing most people dying who are injected. It just simply doesn't add up. You could, just because they want to give you some statistical, you know, caveat to it and say, well, because there's more people that are injected, you're going to see more deaths. Well, that then means that that's not working. Simple as that. You can argue that you're going to see some of them more than you might expect, but not more, 63%, in fact, of the entire total who are dying, who are injected. Now, we're going to make this even more clear as we go through CDC's information itself today that says quite clearly that the transmission is not only there's no difference, but it's just simply, if there's no difference between the two and more people are dying, then this is a complete illusion. Now, hold off your criticism or your thoughts before we get to it, and you just come to your own conclusions, because it's all, I'm going to show you all the data today. Now, jumping over to this next one, again, to make that point, from the now newly named UK Health Security Agency. Great. Another security agency. Public Health of England sounds so friendly and all about you, even though it wasn't. Now we're just going to pull that mask off, even though it wasn't clear anyway. Oh, it's a health security agency. Why is there security even necessary? Well, because they're kind of tying this into fighting pandemics with a hint of maybe a bio attack from somewhere else. That's what it's all about. Now, here is week 41, report number, report 21, week 42. It's the most recent one we're seeing right there. Now, here on table two, it's talking about cases by vaccination. So just cases. We're going to start there. Just cases. And this is specifically between this period of time. Week 38 and week 41. Okay. Now, remembering that we just talked about the report specifically in England just before this, this is going over. This is specifically, let me just make so you can see it, the top of the discussion. UK Health Security Agency COVID-19 Vaccine Surveillance Report, week 42. And so it's in general talking about UK health. So here we are with cases. So it says, let's just start at under 18. Now there's two different things to look at here. There's this part for those that we, for this side of it, where it's talking about doses per they're just occurrence per 100,000 among vaccinated with two doses and not vaccinated. Then you've got three other categories. Again, you've got received one dose 100 to 20 days before the specimen. Then you've got 21 days after the specimen. Then you've got second dose under 14. Again, that's the interesting part of that, or after, excuse me. So regardless, the point is, as we're looking at just these first, just this. Okay, so this is, the top one is under 18, and you've got for rates among persons not vaccinated, 3,013 to 314. Now, remember, this is a group that is largely more so unvaccinated than anybody. Now, as you go down the group, every other category, every one of them is lower in the unvaccinated. Sorry, I keep looking up and I'm seeing this and I'm thinking, oh, that's the wrong side. Unvaccinated is lower in regard to the cases. Sorry, excuse me. Okay. Now, this one is the least important part because cases are completely subjective. Now we go over to emergency, because remember, PCR tests can be manipulated. We have all sorts of things that can throw. That's what I'm going to talk about as we go into some other cases in regard to places they're claiming. Oh, actually, I kicked that off today in regard to Sweden. I'm going to talk about that in another show about lockdowns. But they're making it Sweden out to be some kind of failure. Look at their case. Look at their cases and their. I mean, even the deaths, you could argue, as we know, are manipulated based on how they manipulate the hospitals. But not that aside, because to me, deaths specifically, which is the next one, is the most important because that's the end result. If people are more so dying after injection, that's all you really need to know. But here it is: cases presenting emergency care within 28 days of positive specimen, resulting in an overnight inpatient admission by vaccination status, same week period, 38 to 41. Now, same thing over here, per 100,000. So people who are not vaccinated, you could see, where are we looking at right here? Down in 80 specifically, 1,373 after dose 14. Now you have to remember, you have to add these together. Or not dose 14, excuse me, dose 2 after 14 days versus 134. 134 people not vaccinated over 80 are in emergency care versus 1,373. The most at-risk group and the people who are injected are exponentially more at risk for going to the hospital. Now going to 70 to 79, you've got 167 not vaccinated. Coming over here, you've got 1,174. Now, I'm just using what they would call fully vaccinated. Not even getting into the other ones which you would add. Going down to 60 to 69, 240 people not vaccinated, 729. I mean, there's no. I don't know why this is the clearest thing. 50 to 59, 385 to 552. Now, you get the point. Now, even emergency care. That's not even this is just the passing point. The main point for me is right here. Table 4, COVID-19 deaths within 28 days, within 60 days of positive specimen and on and on. This is deaths, we're told, from COVID-19 based on vaccination status. Not vaccinated. Let's just jump to 18 to 29. 11. Or excuse me, we'll get to the point where you'll see the difference here, right here. So right about 50 to 59. Now, that the rest of those matter. Right. But you got to remember that it tapers down, which you can play that point either way. Bottom line is just more the total versus the total. That matters right now as much as they try to play this dancing game. 50 to 59, you have 83 not vaccinated deaths and you've got 88 after dose 2. 60 to 69, 105. Fully vaccinated, 238. 70 to 79, 98. Both doses, 599. Over 80, only 147 not vaccinated. Second dose, you got 1,175. It's just obscene. Now, I don't know why this is not, I don't understand how this is not being talked about. It just blows my mind. Now, going further on this. Oh, this was just on the point of the public health of England. Just to make this point clear. government under fire over plan to scrap Public Health England in the middle of a pandemic, because that totally makes sense, right? Isn't it strange how they're reorganizing everything you ever knew, including all the health structure, while they're supposedly scrambling to deal with the pandemic? Does that make sense to anybody? Like, wouldn't that seem to be the worst possible time to change everything you know? Unless that was the plan? Yeah, exactly. Health Secretary Matt Hancock is planning to dissolve Public Health of England and replace it with a new agency dedicated to responding to pandemics. Yeah, that wasn't the plan, was it? This was on August 17th. Now it's the Health Security Agency. As Robert Malone points out, first time in history that the ineffectiveness of a medicine is being blamed on those who haven't taken it. A lot of firsts in history. Like censoring, like having editors remove like peer-reviewed scientific studies without even notifying the doctors and the scientists that did them. You know, totally normal. That's why people go, oh, it's been retracted. That means it's fake. No, it doesn't actually, because it was already peer-reviewed, which means the other scientists reviewed it and felt that it was solid. The editorial team is taking things down based on politics. That's my take. Regardless, if it's peer-reviewed, I don't know how in the world you could circle back and take it down. The point is, you should. Once it's peer-reviewed, it's up there for debate. Come study something else and show it count. I mean, it's just crazy what we're seeing. And these are firsts. Toby Young points out that infection rates in the vaccinated are now more than double those in the unvaccinated for people aged 40 to 79, according to the latest data that we were just reviewing. This week, there is also a startling revelation about the vaccines. This stuff is quite obvious. Review that if you would like. Here is another one coming from the UK, showing you something that you'd want to know, that we've continued to tell you. Thank you for COVID memo for pointing this out. Here's the line itself. Inside this document, again, I'll just show you the homepage so you can see the front page. You can see what it is. Again, same report. Here's what it says. Recent observations from UK Health Secretary Security Agency surveillance data that N-antibody, neutralizing antibody levels, appear to be lower in individuals who acquire infection following two doses of vaccination. Isn't that interesting? Now, we're going to prove again to you that their ability to catch it is pretty much just like everybody else. So that means that these people who have already gotten their injections, two of them, in fact, then get COVID-19, have lower antibodies. You know why that shouldn't shock you at all? Because we've continued to tell you that from the beginning, based on the data from the doctors that have told you this. We won't play them again. I've showed it to you a million times, from the mainstream media clip to the doctor himself telling you in a lab that we have studied this, and neutralizing antibodies are 5 to 6 times lower after dose 2 of Pfizer. There it is again, directly on their data. The UK telling you that. Buried in the middle of the report that nobody talks about. Right, exactly. Appear to be lower in individuals who acquire infection after those two doses. Now, what they won't get into is how that also leads to a high possibility of antibody-dependent enhancement. But who cares about that? Because that'll just be named COVID-19 too. This is crazy. So the PCR test is not based on something that makes sense or the fact that they didn't have it to begin with. And they are telling you right now that these things actually seem to hurt you, lower your antibodies. We see data showing you there's more deaths in categories that shouldn't be there. What is actually what they're telling you? Seems like none of it. Now, here is the point we keep repeating to you, that this is about to shift. They're about to shift the point from being 2 doses to 3 doses to be fully vaccinated in this country. I believe that's already been happening. Point is, here's Walensky saying exactly this.
Currently, so we are going to, we have not yet changed the definition of fully vaccinated. We will continue to look at this. We may need to update our definition of fully vaccinated in the future. But right now, what I would say is, if you're eligible for a
that's it. Yeah, right. Okay, so yeah, it's going to happen, right? I mean, you got to be an absolute, you have to have your head buried in 20 feet of sand, if that's even possible, to not see this coming. I mean, if Israel's already doing it, which is showing you pretty clearly without fail what's about to happen next, which is what I've been telling you that for a decade, they have a tendency to jump out ahead of the pack, just like the U.S. government does in similar situations. That's already happening. You're about to be changed. And then the whole point is, well, then what happens to those who've had 2 shots and don't want the next one? Guess what? You're an anti-vaxxer. You're not fully vaccinated. And then when you have a heart attack because you have 2 shots coursing through your veins with spike proteins and mRNA and all sorts of things that are very dangerous, that'll be called the death of the unvaccinated. Pandemic of the unvaccinated, right? And as I said, now, where have you heard this before? That's right. Dismissed as conspiracy theory after being repeated. Dang it, man. I keep making typos on my tweets. And it drives me crazy. Repeatedly proven by the independent media. It will continue to be fake news right up until they tell you what's happening. Already underway in Israel. Are you paying attention? Well, the Off Guardian also pointed this out in a great article. And I said, spoiler alert, this has already been in effect. Think of the implications this has, as I've been repeatedly saying, on the topic of pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's a shell game of manipulation using cherry-picked and often outright falsified data. Pandemic of the injected. And I've showed you many times from the St. Louis government website, they already had on there that 3 months from the last dose, you're also no longer considered fully vaccinated. Now, why would that just be stated and then quietly removed from three other sites too? Something was already being floated and they didn't want you to know. I've shown you this many times. It's the St. Louis government website on the archive. I only got one of them saved. Well, here is a New England Journal of Medicine study pointing out what we're also talking about. The administration of a third booster dose was approved in Israel. This was on October 7th. For persons that were 60 years of age or older and who had received a second dose of the vaccine at least 5 months earlier. That's interesting, right? Didn't they say 6 months? Well, now it's 5 months. We also saw the study from Israel that showed you that after 2 months, it drops down to almost nothing, right? So why 6 months? Why five? Why not two? Why not three? Well, how much you want to bet that's going to shift as they want you to see it? Regardless, this was back then. They've already opened this up for everybody since this October 7th study. And everybody now is capable of getting their third shot. And now they have to. If they don't, they're not fully vaccinated in Israel. Same thing's happening here. But I wanted you to see the 5 months versus the 6 months. It just, now why would they be on different timelines? They're all looking at the same data, we're told, right? Sure, they could come to their different opinions, but that doesn't, my point is that it's fluctuating. Now, as they point out in this article, which you should read for yourself, at the virtual presser, accompanied by the approval of mix and match booster jabs, Rochelle Walensky told the reporters that we'll continue to look at this because we're going to change the definition, is what she's ultimately hiding right there, or letting you hear. Without saying it, we're going to keep looking at that and make sure. I mean, why would they? I mean, wouldn't they know right now? Right? And if they're already pushing booster shots, then why would it be a we don't know? Clearly, this is a dragging their feet until they get it going, and then they're going to say, "Well, now you have to look at you already got half the country doing it. You're the weird one." Well, just since they brought up the mix and match, which is obviously the point that got buried in this whole thing, how ridiculous this is! Mix and match COVID vaccine boosters are here. How to choose the best one for you? Right? Just roll it out and guess. It's like a bargain bin. Pick your choice, right? This is obscene. This is unscientific. It is dangerous. And I keep showing you the New York Post article that they, when they brought this up, it was one of the leading locations in regard to vaccines. He was a vaccine expert from one of the most highly regarded locations. And he was saying this is completely guessing their way out of a problem. This is dangerous, not scientific. And nobody should be doing this. Now, by the way, I keep showing you the CDC and the FDA say on their websites right now that this is not to happen. We do not know if this is safe. There is no data to back this up. I just showed you this in the last show I did covering this. That didn't change. So how in the world is the U.S. government saying we're going to let you do this based on no scientific evidence? I don't know why that doesn't throw everything into question. I think I do know why, because there's an agenda going on and they're aggressively hiding everything from most people. But as Whitney also points out today, Chile goes the way of Israel. You know that she's in that country, so she's aware. It will annul its vaccine passport, the mobility pass, for those without a third dose, currently for people 55 years and older. It will probably be expanded from that age group, just like with Israel, to everyone. However, since they are already working on a fourth dose. Exactly. This is exactly what's happening, and it's panning out everywhere. Now Chile is doing the same thing. And as I said, we all warned this was coming, guys. It's not too late to stand up. You're not alone out there. I don't care whether you've gotten two shots and you said, if you suddenly realize that we are being forced and we should all make our own choices, you're on our side. They want to try to go, oh, they're anti-vax and we're pro. No, we're not anti anything. We are pro your choice. Your ability to make your own choice. That's what we are for. Your ability to make your own medical decisions and your own choices in general, for that matter. The way they try to frame us as anti-something is a way they keep you divided on lines. Be smarter than that. Now, James Lyons Wilder points out, if you still believe that COVID-19 vaccination is for the greater good, or that people must be vaccinated to prevent transmission, or that getting a booster against extinct variants increase immunity to current variants, chill. We've got it from here. Hashtag science says. James Lyons Wilder has come out as a voice of reason in this whole process. I want you to hone in on that extinct variants point. Now, this is what we have. This is PhD, James Lyons-Weiler, very intelligent person. Doesn't mean just because he says it, it's right, but it means that this is an expert giving you his opinion. Just like a lot of others have said the same. I've been making this point from the beginning of this conversation about the variants changing. These are based on the original variant, or excuse me, well, alpha, and as specifically the original Wuhan strain. And they even tried to argue in regard to alpha, but we're way past that at this point. So they tell us, delta being the point. So if you're making something based on an extinct variant and acting like that's going to create immunity to this, you don't understand what's going on. On top of that, what we have seen for very clearly from all the scientific outlets they tell you to trust, they're telling you that your natural immunity is robust, lasting, durable, and is in fact continuing to make variant or make antibodies and T cell memory B to the new variants. I've shown you this many times. If you don't know that right now, ask yourself how in the world that's even possible. And then you'll quickly realize that they're hiding things from you. This is coming from Science Mag, from a lot from science itself, from Nature, from WHO, from The Lancet, from the Journal of Infectious Medicine, all these classically anti-science fringe conspiracy theorist outlets. Obviously, I'm being facetious. Now, going over to the breakthrough case part of this, because you can see how all this flows together, right? Each one of these points bolsters the one before it. Thank you for Dr. Fauci Sucks for reaching out to me and showing me this, because this is really important. This makes the case that I've been making the entire time. Here's what it says on the CDC possibility of breakthrough infections page, updated as of September 7th. It says, first of all, just in case you didn't know, because this is something that people on the Twitter sphere, the blue checks out there, would say is fake news, as Biden says, you can't spread it to other people. Well, here's the CDC. People who get vaccine breakthrough infections can be contagious. Oops. I guess Biden was lying or wrong or not able to think for himself. Isn't that funny? So the CDC states it right there, but he's all good. He can say whatever he wants, but we'll be censored for telling you the truth. Here it says under how CDC monitors those breakthrough infections. Now, here's the point I've been making the whole time. They're acting like they can tell you that they know what's going on in this regard. We know breakthrough cases. It's a small thing. It's only people that are unvaccinated causing the problem. Well, guess what it says here? This system provides the most complete data on vaccine breakthrough in the general population. You know why that's 100% false? Because Bloomberg already did its own investigation over a shorter period of time with way more states than the CDC is using and very clearly showed you over 100,000 cases that you didn't see. And they're still arguing below 100,000. Think about how dumb that is. Regardless, it says, COVIDNet, which is what they're using, is a population-based surveillance system that collects reports of lab-confirmed COVID-19-related hospitalizations in 99 counties in 14 states. That's it. But they're telling you they know, because clearly they just are guessing and telling you that's fact, which is what they do. But also realize that it says lab confirmed COVID-19 related hospitalizations. What happened to deaths? I guess they're just leaving that out now. Especially knowing that they lie to you on a regular basis. That's unreal. But it's getting presented as fact by the mainstream media because that's what they do. But don't forget, though, guys, regardless of what they keep yelling at you, this was what they told you, even from the mainstream media. This is August 19th. Study that we covered on this show tells you fully vaccinated people with breakthrough COVID Delta infections carry as much as the unvaccinated, as much virus as the unvaccinated. The cases in general seem to be higher in the vaccinated in a lot of places. Then you can see that they carry as much virus as the unvaccinated. Now, also remember, too, that what we're talking about here, why is it just as the unvaccinated? You see, what they're trying to do right here is argue that this is their false dichotomy, their false argument, their false choice. They're going, well, you've got people over here on the vaccinated side getting breakthrough cases, and they carry as much virus as that whole group over there, unvaccinated. But wait a minute, the unvaccinated are not just all a given. They don't all just all have the virus, right? The unvaccinated still have to catch that virus first, if that's what you believe is happening, okay? So they, half of them at the very least, have natural immunity, okay? So it's a lot of them are totally good to go. On top of that, most of them have basically no risk of getting sick or dying even in regard to what we see statistically speaking, breaking it up by age, which is what they never want to do. They never want to do that in regard to COVID-19 issues, because then that shows you that the vast majority of the population is at less risk than the flu. But when they average it out, ooh, it's super scary looking. Okay, well, guess what they do on the other side of it? Well, they stratify it by age and go, look, it's not as bad as you think, because they want to make their argument look better. The same reason they stop really looking into breakthrough cases and they're focusing on the cases from before. Or they go, we're only going to report hospitalizations and death to breakthrough cases, but we're going to report everything on the other side. We're going to use 29 breakthrough cycle threshold on breakthrough cases. We're going to use up to 45 on COVID cases. This is a game. You are being manipulated. The unvaccinated by default do not just have the virus. That's the only way this comparison makes sense. You all have to catch it. And right now, they seem to be catching it more. Based on the data here, guys, this is what's so crazy to me. Now, here is another point. Now, open for business. New South Wales just scrapped quarantine for the fully vaccinated. Excuse me? If they're catching it more and their viral load is the same, what's the difference here? Why in the world would you make them no longer have to? Well, because it's about compliance. All this data is in front of them. They just don't care. Now, we're going to get to a CDC article in a moment that makes this even more clear. In regard to the passports, I believe that was right here. Yes. No, maybe I'm, hold on, make sure I'm not missing it. My point here in regard to this document. No, I guess we went into it. I always hate that when I feel like I'm missing a point. Well, regardless, guys, the point is very clear in regard to how they're playing the game and that they're allowing the people who are injected, despite having the ability to transmit, the ability to spread, the ability to catch, and have the same or higher viral load. Because remember the study we showed you on top of that, the one that they want you to see, which is funny, if they want you to see that, imagine that's the point. Other studies have shown you that it can be up to 4 to 6 times higher based on different factors. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing, guys. Now, the point on this is to show that vaccine passports are also happening, right, in real time. They're regardless of all the data that shows you that this is the very least questionable. But it's far more than that. That's a very kind way to put that. It's obvious there's a problem, but they're driving it in anyways. Now, as I said, and here the point is, Biden says U.S. to require vaccine passports. Remember when they said they wouldn't do that? It was all fake news. This is in regard to COVID tests when international restrictions lift next month. So people coming in have a vaccine pass, right? This is the beginning. It's starting outside. Even though passports are already happening, it's not a government mandate, but this is where it's going. This was always the plan. And as I said, remember when vaccine passports were just a conspiracy theory and all those dirty anti-science misinfo spreaders were to blame for the fake news? If you still don't see this, that's a choice. And this is the funny, it is funny, but it's also really unnerving to see how this is so obvious. The little meme I've shared before from the White Rose, 2020. In 2020, anyone claiming there's a plan to implement vaccine passports is a conspiracy theorist and their dangerous misinformation must be stopped. Jump forward to 2021. Anyone opposed to those same vaccine passports is a conspiracy theorist and their dangerous misinformation must be stopped. Like, if you can't recognize how dumb that is, then again, that's a choice. That's a choice to realize that people were right, that they've labeled fake news because it was showing what was about to happen. Because we've shown you the European Union plan. I wasn't planning on grabbing this, but since it seems relevant, as I always, oops. There it is. Here we are. Plan, the European Union plan, showing you from back in the middle of 2018-19, they planned for common vaccine card or passport to happen when? Right between 21 and 2022. Right on schedule. Now, how could they possibly have known that would happen at a time when people were going, hell no, that'll never happen. And then, oh, virus danger. Well, now we're going to force it in because that was the plan, guys. And it's not hard to see. Now, on top of that, here's a little an unnerving statement from the prime minister of New Zealand telling you exactly what this is what you call saying the quiet part out loud. This is pretty crazy. That she's going to admit to you right here that we are creating two classes of people.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like you probably don't see it like this, the two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated...
That is what it is. So, yep. Yep.
Pretty easy. Oh, yeah, exactly. We're making you different people. Right on. I mean, they're slowly showing you what's going on. I mean, that is the plan. You're the dirty unvaxxers over there, and you're second class citizens. Except that was, I mean, this is exact. These are becoming. This is like an apartheid state. This is exactly like the kind of segregation, racism, whatever you want to call it, for that they have been screaming we need to stop, is now being applied to people of all walks of life and all colors and creeds in regard to your vaccination status. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. It's ridiculous. I mean, this is like, it's just a contradiction of everything they claim they stand for. And I think that should show you by now that they never really stood for those things. On that note, since I forgot to say it, I'm rocking the new Vagabond t-shirt, as you can see. I'll give the link to that at the end of the show today. Pretty cool shirt. Truth Clothing doing a great job. Bringing this back. This was what was always coming. This is about the transition, which I believe was the plan, to having natural immunity allowed on your passport. And you got all these Republicans screaming, yay, we won! We did it! Sort of how they thought they won with QAnon and Trump and so on, right? Nothing new. This is the same old ploy wrapped in a different package. If you're still stuck in the two-party paradigm, you will be fooled. You will be led astray. And as COVID-1984 points out, Congressman Daryl Issa introduces legislation challenging the looming mandate, which begins to sound good, seeks to exempt those who have natural immunity. What does that mean? Well, you still have a vaccine passport. You still have to have a passport. And when you go in the restaurant, the bus, the plane, the grocery store, you have to show that passport and say, no, I have natural immunity. Oh, and guess what? You have to re-up that every 6 months, just like everybody else, despite the fact that it's lasting, robust, and durable. And as nature would tell you, lasts the rest of your life. And the WHO would tell you 99% of you have it, and on and on and on. But none of that matters, because it's all about compliance. Now, I warned you, this was the next step. If you're confused at all about why the Western world just kind of suddenly forgot what natural immunity was, it was just a means to an end. That's my opinion. To make us think we won, when in reality, we all still end up with immunity passports, adaptable to whatever's next.
And a new bill would exempt people with natural COVID antibodies from the president's proposed vaccine mandate. East County Congressman Daryl Issa authored the legislation. But ABC 10 News reporter John Horn explains why those who already had COVID are still advised to get vaccinated.
Of course. See, that's there. Okay, we're going to segue into do it anyway, though, because you're super in danger, despite the fact that all the data shows that's not true, right? Like, the narrative is vaccine good, and no matter what, who cares about antibody-dependent enhancement? Who cares the fact that there's a multitude of ways that this could hurt you, or the fact that it adds things we'll get into later in the show? It adds risk, especially when these people are mostly not at risk. It doesn't matter, though. You see, this is about segueing into allowing people to be, it's infrastructure, the Great Reset. That's where this is going. I don't know how I can make it any more clear. We told you this would happen. Here it is. How many times that happened so far? Of course, talking about manipulation of the information, which is all this is really about. This is ridiculous. Like, this made me laugh out loud. I was like, is this, I actually wondered for a minute whether this was a fake version of CNN or whatever else. It says people vaccinated against COVID-19 are less likely to die from any cause, study finds. This is a case study in how they can find whatever they want if they want to make it happen. Sure, you're safe no matter what, right? You're less likely to die from general. Apparently this makes you immortal now. Of course, I mean, it's kind of a joke. It's less likely to die. So you live longer if you take this dangerous thing that seems to be hurting a lot of people based on all the data, because they said so. I said, well, there you have it, folk, because I typoed again. Not only is the COVID injection totally safe and effective, but apparently it also just generally protects you from literally everything. Another perfectly self-serving study by the CDC, dang it. But what's funny, too, is remember in the beginning where, it's still happening, but they were focusing on it, everything under the sun. This is even hilarious. I even made a joke about COVID toe. I just randomly, your toe hurts. It's COVID. Remember that? I said that before that ever happened. I was just randomly thinking of something ridiculous. You know, my eye feels funny. My toe hurts. It's COVID. And then literally they come out with the COVID toe. It's like, I can't, this is silly. The point is, everything anywhere was COVID. Same thing here. Well, it just saves you from everything. He's good to go. Just shut up and take your shot because it's good for you. Take your medicine. This is unreal. Now, here's the actual study they point to. Now, I want to make the first point in regard to the timeline. Recognize that August and September and October were this is where this started to get bad. Because, I mean, we even just showed you the report. This is the one we were talking about last. This one. This is the one from the previous show, not the one we really got into today. Now, this one was report number 23 from September 17th. Now, the one before this, remember we showed you, it was even almost, where this is the one where it started to get lopsided on the vaccinated side. So the reality is, if you only go to July, well, you're at the very least, you're going to dramatically undercut the problems we're already seeing. Now, it could just be that they posted this on October 22nd. So you got to ask yourself why that wasn't the case. But regardless, there's one example of why this is not as sound as they want to make it out to be. If you really open up that door to all of the waterfall of adverse events and problems, it clearly undermines the mortality of the people getting it. But Aaron says, during December, at the same point, the timeline, COVID vaccine recipients had lower rates of non-COVID mortality than did unvaccinated persons. Of course, this is my point before, after adjusting for age, sex, race, and ethnicity, and study site. You see, they could have kept adding them. We'll add age and see if that makes it look better. Add race. Well, add ethnicity. Oh, add where they got the study done. Okay. Oh, there you go. Now it looks like we want it to look. Yeah, that's p-hacking. We've talked about p-hacking before. It's like rolling out the Yahtzee dice and just grabbing up what you think looks. Oh, that's perfect. Keep it there. Doctors, scientists have spoken out about this. It's what happens when you have a profit-minded, government-driven funding to drive science. But the point is that why wouldn't they adjust for age in regard to COVID-19 issues? Well, because then it shows you're not really in danger. Of course, they can't have that. Regardless, this study is, in my opinion, ridiculous on its face. To really genuinely, okay, if we're looking at data that shows you that in most categories, especially at the most risk, you have far more damage happening. And then we can show on any other way for in this that you're lowering antibodies, that you show all sorts of other damage happening, that it wanes after so many months. I mean, all this information adds up. And you're claiming that they still somehow just are safer from everything else? How about the fact this seems to be increasing other infections? Or how about the fact that, I mean, there's a million caveats here that just simply make zero sense. If you read through this for yourself, and you will quickly realize this is a obviously self-serving argument that just seems ridiculous. This is like arguing that this vaccine works 100% of the time. Nothing backs this up other than their manipulated study. I mean, guys, we've seen this the entire time. As I've said before, we've seen them point out or grab data from the wrong time of the year to argue for the time we're currently in, which is kind of what that's about. I just think this is very, very clear that they are manipulating this based on cherry-picked data and everything else, especially when you add in things like this, right? So how does this make sense? If it's safer, yet we have I don't even know the percentage anymore. What you're looking at here is a graph showing you that every single year before 2020, it's going to be way worse in 2021. That there was really no, there was this, I think it was end up like maybe close to 700 reports. Right now, this is just death. As of 2020, you're looking at almost 1,800 reports. See, 18,000 reports of death. Now, sure, don't know for sure, because anybody could do it, right? We all know the narrative, but how come then they keep using VAERS to make arguments when they want to during COVID? Or how about the fact that they've used them in the flu from before? They had 50 unverified deaths around swine flu, same circumstances, and they stopped the whole program. So here we are with almost 18,000 unverified death reports, and we don't care about it? His point, how people who think the vaccine is safe must explain VAERS data. From 1990 to 2019, he says, anti-vaxxers lay low for 30 years and don't file fake reports with VAERS. As of 2020, all of a sudden, anti-vaxxers start filing a mass number of false reports with VAERS. Right, that sure makes sense. Is it possible? Sure. But how about we verify that before we dismiss it all as fake news? Right, that's what's happening right now. VAERS is fake news, despite it being the really only location that's co-managed by the CDC and the FDA to report these things, where they're telling them to report it to, and then everyone goes, no, that's fake news though, didn't you hear? Right, and yet they live longer and are safer from everything once they get this shot. Sure makes sense, doesn't it? Well, how about we ask Sweden about that, or Lithuania, and realize that after their vaccine mandates and their mask mandate, it skyrocketed, along with pretty much every other location in this regard. And this is one of the most important points we're going to get to here, that right now, according to a scientific study from the European Journal of Epidemiology, they're showing you that there is no discernible difference, but in fact, a slight positive difference to people that do not do this. We are seeing the vaccine administration in high numbers. And in all those locations, almost all of them, we are seeing a skyrocketing of cases. Now, the places that have the least administration of injections, like this study, there's actually a small benefit. No, you could argue all over you want, all over that. You could go 1,000 different directions. Well, there's different populations, there's different ages, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that stuff matters. But at the end of the day, across the board, people who have more injections are faring worse. That's the simplest you can put it. And they just don't want to acknowledge that. Now, I'm going to revisit this in regard to Sweden lockdowns, probably in the next show I do, showing you that they're trying to make Sweden out to be a problem. Look at how they failed, they keep saying. Except the data shows you an obviously different picture. Here's another example. Here, Peter Sweden points out, it's now 1 month since Norway removed all restrictions. No COVID passports, no masks, no social distancing rules. The 7-day average COVID death rate is 1. Why is nobody talking about the success of Norway? Because they don't want you to see what's happening. All these places are showing you this, and they just keep going, I'm so confused. How does this possibly make sense? Here's an example. Vaccines, masks. Japan puzzling over sudden virus success. Yeah, it's not a big shocker. You're doing away with the things causing the problem. Almost overnight, Japan has become a stunning and somewhat mysterious COVID success story. New daily COVID cases have plummeted. The bars are packed, the trains are crowded, and the mood is celebratory, despite a general bafflement over what exactly is behind the sharp drop. Yeah, we're baffled. It can't be that you're not doing those things because we all agree we're supposed to say those things work. It says Japan, unlike other places in Europe and Asia, guess what, guys? Has never had anything close to a lockdown. Gee, that's why they're puzzled. Just a series of relatively toothless states of emergency. Right. So they didn't do the thing that seems to be exacerbating every problem we could possibly point to. They didn't force the things that are causing the problem. But it says, but with vaccine efficacy gradually waning and winter approaching, experts worry that without knowing what exactly caused the drop, Japan could face another wave. Well, that's a little self-serving. How about you realize that they're doing something right and it's going away in a time when others are getting worse? Well, we're going to just pretend that means that it will get bad along with everybody else. That's like the most unscientific conclusion based on, you know, superficial data that I could possibly imagine. Japan could face another wave, they say, when hospitals overflowed with serious cases and deaths soared based on the last one, though the numbers were lower in previous vaccination levels. This is ridiculous, but it says many credit the vaccination campaign, especially among younger people, for bringing infections down. Nearly 70% of the population has been fully vaccinated. But you know why that doesn't add up? Because you could point to most every other location with the same or higher percentage of vaccination, and it's not even close. You know what the difference is? The non-lockdown, non-restrictive lifestyle. And sure, people go and get this, but you know what I'm going to argue? They're going to see a dramatic spike because this administration was done rapidly. They did this between June and October. We haven't even gotten into their big problem. We are going to see, just like we're seeing in the United States, a toppling of this. They're going to see people continue to drop based on what will be the ongoing side effects of this injection. We're going to get into this more from from very highly credentialed experts that are telling you, based on their new study, that they're proving the injection is causing what they call long haul. Causing it. Now, ask yourself that in regard to the long haul conversation and what we're about to see happen in Japan. Also, the same point I was saying before, it says that's enough to have vaccinated 73%. Now, is it? Here's the point again. Look, nearly 70% of the population is fully vaccinated. Now, is that true? Well, no, it's not. You know why? Because it says Japan has administered this many doses. That's what they're counting. Assuming every person needs 2 doses, that's enough to have vaccinated about 73%. You see the game being played right there? So how much you want to bet when you factor in the third doses for some people that might have already gotten it or so on? Or the fact that there's caveats to that. But the point being, AP still reported it as 70. And this is, you know, they're nearly. I just think that's really interesting. There's a game being played there, like every other level, self-serving. But the point was, one infection per 100,000 people reported in the last 7 days. Based on my opinion, this stuff. Now, I'll go on to make this more clear. My point was that they happened quickly. I believe we're going to see a large waterfall of problems like we've seen everywhere else. Now, here, are the five states that are out of control with COVID, we're told. Now let's look at those states. First one is Vermont. Guess what? Despite having the highest vaccination rates in the country, almost 99%, I understand it, there are constant reminders for most. Basically, they're struggling like crazy. Number one, top of the list, highest vaccination rates, top of the list. But it's totally expected because they've got the most vaccinated. Yeah, that doesn't make sense anymore. That does not make sense. They're struggling and they've got the highest rates. Number two, Colorado. Now let's go through them individually. Oh, I thought I had Vermont pulled up. I thought, regardless, it's the highest. I mean, that makes the case for itself. I believe it's 99%. Here is Colorado. They have 72% eligible people, right? So it's, you know, that it's the under the number you're not supposed to vaccinate. So we're told, so it would be less if you're looking at the full population. Regardless, we're told that that's the number you're supposed to reach for herd immunity and so on, right? Colorado, same point. Better protection could certainly help. COVID-19 numbers are on the decline, but in Colorado, oh, that's from before, but in Colorado, health officials say the trends are heading in the wrong direction. While we're seeing this increase in Colorado, most states in the country are now seeing a decline. They're seeing an increase despite having a high rate of vaccination. Here we are in Michigan, same point. Now, also, I want to point something out I find interesting. Any state that seems to be around 50-ish percentage of the injections, which is one of, this is Michigan, 53%. It shows up on the, you know, it just pops up like this, where you can just search this and it shows you that, right? But any of them that I've noticed, any of them that I did this with their up in the 70s or more, they don't really show it. Now, that's just my thought. It doesn't have to, I'm not necessarily saying that proves anything, but let's just do it real quick so you can see. Here's Colorado. Now, why isn't it doing it for that one? It's weird, right? Here's one for New Hampshire, also 62. But once you get up to the 70s, I keep noticing that correlation that doesn't pop up anymore. Maybe because you're beginning to see that in those locations, they have the worst problem. So they don't want you to really notice that. That's just a thought of mine, certainly possible. But Michigan, 53%, showing you that it's kind of all over the map. Going down, COVID-19 has cases in New Hampshire. That was the next one. Here it is, 62% New Hampshire. Then we've got Minnesota. Finally, Minnesota, they have a high percentage, 77 over 18, 74 over 16, 65. I mean, they were told in the beginning, if you do this, you'll be good. You'll be safe. It'll all be, you'll get back to normal. And they rush to it and then they say, you're worse than anybody. Why would you keep complying with this? It does not make sense. Now, here is the real point. This is from FEE Stories, but here's the actual study we'll get to from the European Journal of Epidemiology, September 30th, almost a month ago. Yeah, where's the mainstream media? I guess they don't care about all this science they're supposed to be trusting. Isn't that funny? But here it is. Vaccination rates not linked to lower COVID rates. Guys, this destroys the entire argument. Now, you'll see what I mean. Not just about cases, because this is what this will show you is it does not reduce transmission. That's what matters. If these people are still spreading it like anybody else without any reduction, that destroys their narrative. Vaccination rates not linked to lower COVID rates. Epidemiology paper finds. A new paper in the European Journal of Epidemiology, highly respected, that analyzed not 90 counties in 14 states, but 168 countries in 2,947 U.S. counties. And they found that higher vaccination rates were not associated with fewer COVID cases. So why are we taking this thing? Why are they, not we, why are people taking this thing? As it says, in fact, Vermont has the highest vaccination rate. Oh, here's what I had right here. Highest vaccination rate in the country. Among those 65 and older, 99.9% are fully injected, with 74% of those 18 to 64 fully injected. Yet, as the Chronicle points out, despite its high injection rate, Vermont recently set its single day case record for the entire pandemic. As of October 1st, Vermont's 7-day average case per 100,000 people was 30, triple that of the Bay Area. Now, the point here is that they would argue, well, that's what we expect, which doesn't even make sense if that was the only argument. But they go, oh, that's what we expect, because more people are injected. Therefore, you're going to have more cases, but they don't go to the hospital as much, or it's very rare of the death and hospitalization. No, that's not what the data shows, but just keep yelling that. But leaving that aside for the moment, because I've debunked that 100 times over, the point is about what they say in the study about transmission. It says, why is widespread agreement among scientists? There is widespread agreement among scientists that COVID-19 vaccines are highly effective at reducing the risk of developing severe COVID symptoms, which can result in hospitalization and death. I don't agree with that. And it's not widespread agreement. There is a huge, huge dissent from that. Scientists, Nobel laureates, doctors, MDs, all across the board. And all they do is just dismiss those ones when they don't say the right thing. That's why you find a bunch of pediatricians being trotted out on CNN and Fox News. It's ridiculous. But that being said, it goes on to say their effectiveness at reducing transmission of the virus, however, remains a subject of debate, particularly since the CDC released findings in July that show vaccinated individuals still contract the virus, transmit it, and carry just as much virus particles in their throat and nasal passages as unvaccinated individuals do when they contract the virus. Thank you, finally, for saying it the right way. Because you're just because you're unvaccinated doesn't mean, therefore, you have the virus. If you catch it. So there's still the point. So these people, they're still catching it and spreading it just like everybody else. They still have just as much, if not more, than people who might also catch it. So what in the world is the difference? They go, well, it's less dangerous for them. Well, maybe that's the case. The data doesn't back that up. But it says, while scientists concede that the vaccines cannot stop transmission. How in the world does this make sense? Biden just lied about this for the third time on the air. Many contend they still reduce the transmission of the virus. Now, it says other scientists are less secure, and a new study suggests their skepticism may be warranted. The study, published last month in the European Journal of Epidemiology, a monthly peer-reviewed medical journal, examined 168 countries, as we told you, 2,947 counties in the United States, more so than the U.S. CDC cared to do about their own study about breakthrough cases. Great job, guys. And concluded that higher vaccination rates are not associated with fewer COVID cases. Quote, at the country level, there appears to be no discernible relationship between percentage of population fully vaccinated and new COVID-19 cases in the last 7 days. Quote, in fact, the trend line suggests a marginally positive association such that countries with higher percentages of populations fully vaccinated have higher COVID cases per 1 million, meaning that they have a better situation. They have a positive association with less vaccination. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But let's go to the study itself for more specific points that I'm going to make here. It says at the country level, this is what we read a moment ago, just so you can see the crossover, there appears to be no discernible relationship between those two things, the percentage of vaccination and COVID cases. The lack of a meaningful association between percentage population fully vaccinated and new COVID cases is further exemplified, for instance, by comparison of Iceland and Portugal. Hey, something we've done. Both countries have over 75% of their population fully vaccinated and have more COVID-19 cases per 1 million people than countries such as Vietnam and South Africa that have around 10% of the population fully vaccinated. Does not make sense. But it says across the U.S. counties, too, the median new COVID-19 cases per 100,000 people in the last 7 days is largely similar across that the categories of percent population fully vaccinated. So same point, same situation in the United States. Across the board, they've got more cases, but they don't want you to think about that. There also appears to be no significant signaling of COVID-19 cases decreasing with higher percentages of population fully vaccinated. So they keep going higher. And in fact, like I keep telling you, they seem to have less cases if they have less vaccination. And when we get to the transmission part, as we keep showing you that they can transmit it, and especially remembering the study that shows you when it, if you have something that keeps the transmission going, you're making variants. That's what's creating the variants. But here's what it says, and this is the most important part. I believe so, yeah. On top of the top five counties, the counties within the United States, that have the highest percentage of population fully vaccinated, between 99.9 and 84.3, the CDC identifies four of those counties as high transmission counties. You see, so they're not just having the cases that are being caught from those dirty unvaxxers. No, they are the ones transmitting more than anybody. This should be over. There's no questioning what this shows you. If they are transmitting it, catching it with the same, if not higher viral load, and The places with the highest vaccination rate have the most cases and, in fact, are showing to be the highest transmission. They are the ones keeping this going, if you believe that's even what's happening. Now, it says Georgia, New Mexico, and it shows you the specific counties, Puerto Rico counties have above 90% of their population fully vaccinated, with all three being classified as high transmission. Conversely, and this is what makes the point even clearer, of the 57 counties that have been classified as low transmission counties by the CDC, 15 of them have percentages of population fully vaccinated below 20%. There is no way this adds up other than them choosing to look at what they want to see and hiding everything that shows you there's a problem. They won't talk about this, regardless of where it comes from, because it shows you the reality. Now, here's a Yale epidemiology professor telling you the same thing, that if he had a child in school and they were trying to force the vaccine on him, he would pull his kid out as fast as possible. I believe we grabbed this too. Let's see. Maybe not. Okay, we'll just listen to you right here.
Well, as far as I can tell, that it's a top-down structure, and most doctors do not get their information by going back and reading the original studies and making up their own minds. They get fed the information from pharma reps or from what they're told from societies, and the conflicts are legion, and so it's no surprise that most doctors don't pay attention and think what they're told.
If you're a parent and you have a 7 or 8-year-old, the federal government is going to insist that those kids get vaccinated. Or if you live in a state like California, where Governor Newsom is going to do that and so forth, and he has a horrific record, most of these governors do, not all, but most, what would you do? Would you get your kid vaccinated? Would you talk to your local doctor? What would you do?
If the child has chronic conditions that make their risk appreciable, then there's a reason that they should be considered for vaccination. Other than that, if it were my child, I would homeschool them. Honestly, I would organize with other parents to take them out of the school. And
counter communities. That's what he's talking about. We need to go somewhere else, start your own school, your own medical practice. There's half this country that is unemployed because of what they're doing. It needs that. Doctors, scientists, lawyers, pharmacists, all of them. We can do that.
Create homeschooling environments. There's no choice. Your child's life is on the line. It's not a high risk. Vaccination is not a high risk that's going to kill every child by doing so. However, it's enough of a risk that on the average, the benefit is higher for homeschooling than it is for vaccination and being in school. And that's just the bottom line. You know, we were seeing employees in the companies facing mandates quit or being fired. And now the public perceives that, and companies are having a hard time replacing those employees in the climate of a bad employment circumstances and missing workers. It's getting even harder. And so those policies are being rethought. When the people rebel because of their own interests, then it has to be reckoned.
Exactly. Now, by the way, this is what, you know, frustrates me. You know, is that people, not necessarily you guys in the chat, but people will dismiss this just because, oh, well, that's on Fox News, so that's fake news, right? If this Yale professor was on CNN, well, then he would be, people in that mindset would, well, then he's valid. So you see, the point is, it doesn't matter the context of what he's saying. It matters that he's on the wrong side. And that is, in a quick example, the childish nature of the two-party illusion. And we all see that. It's ridiculous. Right, I don't trust Fox News, and even CNN, just like Fox News, will have things on their show that I just played a CNN thing a few shows ago that was valid and made a good point. That's not because CNN's fighting for you. It's because in that moment, that point was advantageous to their agenda. That's all it means. Same thing here. Fox News is playing the fake resistance just like it was. I mean, what have I told you? It teeter-totters back and forth and back and forth. Remember when the Democrats were the resistance? Right. I mean, it's the same. It goes now. Fox News is fighting against the, you know, CNN was the resistance. Now they're the resistance fighting against the thing. It's nonsense. If we can't see this, we are being naive. The two-party illusion and all the mainstream media are not on your side. But that point is valid. Now, whether Dr. Harvey Reich is somebody you should listen to or not, the point is that what he said there was valid and backed up by the facts. On top of that, he is an expert and has the credentials, and you should consider, not take, but consider what he has to say. But they don't want you to hear it. Now, all of what we talked about today, all the clear damage and all the clear problems, and how the data shows you that it's clearly on the side of people getting injected and everything they're covering up, and the breakthrough cases are all over the place and everybody can spread it and catch it and still have the viral load, all of that. And they're going, well, we're going to jam it in kids' arms 6 to 11. Because that makes sense, right? The least risk category, 19 and below. Oxford calculator tells you 1 in a million chance of dying. It gets even better if you get lower on the number. And yet we're still going to jam in these kids' arms, and they're doing it now to study. And guess what? People die in these studies every time. They just keep it from your view. They kick them off the trial. We pointed this out in the early trials. People got hurt. But that's expected because we don't know for sure. They could have just died from that. Yeah, he had a heart problem, but we don't know. He could have had it before. Remember back then when that was happening, and now we see myocarditis? Remember, we should compare those things. 6 to 11. This is disgusting. Not only that, there's a lot of other reasons we've already gone over, including natural immunity and all sorts of things that just don't get considered. But we're going to do it anyway. They're telling you. They have been telling you. Here is an ace from South Africa. A circular sent by the Western Cape government stated that 12 to 17-year-olds do not need parental consent. Oh, that's cool. We'll just ignore things we've been held sacred this whole time. And not because they changed some law. They just go, yeah, you don't need it anymore. We don't care about that. But you can't do things. I mean, at least in the context of how the U.S. is doing it. You can't smoke. You can't drive. You can't join the military. But sure, you can go ahead and have a sex change. You can go ahead and do it, you know, get an injection that we tell you is experimental. I mean, that's just ridiculous. There's no continuity, I guess. It doesn't add up. You can't, how can they not buy a cigarette, but you're going to allow them to take an experimental therapy? Well, that works for both arguments, doesn't it? This is wrong. Very, very wrong. Now, Panda points out that this is wrong as well, and I want to include their document they put out about it. Informed consent is not child's play. Panda's one of the groups that this was, I'm blanking on his name. Taylor Hudak just interviewed him. Please, in the chat, help me out. I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. A great interview with Taylor Hudak from one of the founders of Panda, I believe. A great guy, great information. Shoot, in the chat, shout it out. I'll keep an eye out for it. But this, I just want to include what they said about this because they're on your side. Now, on this discussion of kids, I had to include this because this was just unnerving to me. And as I said in my tweet, it gave me a physical reaction. Florida father accuses the school, not accused, I mean, this is what happened. Because it was talked about, I mean, it was proved. Nick Hudson, thank you, Star. Nick Hudson, an outstanding interview. Tying a mask onto the head of his daughter, right? That's terrible enough. A child having a mask tied on their head. But guess what? She was a disabled daughter with Down syndrome. Special needs. This is disgusting. And what this made me think, actually here, I'll give you my thought. Well, I don't want to forget about it. I'm going to play what this member of this local councilman had to say about this. And this was the school board, excuse me. What I believe this is, what we're looking at here with these kind of things happening, I believe that these are the bad people among us, the sociopaths, the people that are morally ambiguous, that are using COVID to make themselves look like they're virtuous, which is exactly what your politicians do. Right? Saying that we're doing the right thing, right? But no, they love the power, right? I do not understand how a compassionate, empathetic person could do something like this. In fact, I don't believe it's possible. I think somebody who cares about other human beings, regardless of what the government tells them is right, would go, you know what? That's not okay. We know this child does not, that is the reason they tied it on is because she kept taking it off, because it was bothering her, because she doesn't, there's any number of things you could point out. But what I see is that there's the morally ambiguous people out there that are stepping into this world and going, well, this is what's right. You have to do this. You have to go inside because that's the right thing. And I'm a good person. And they love the power, love being on the side of what they feel they're in control of, forcing kids to do what they want them to do and acting like it's the right thing. Compassionate people don't do things like this. Good people don't do things like this. As I said, this physically upsets me. Only cowards and morally ambiguous people who have been given a veneer of false virtue to hide behind would take such an obviously harmful action. Before this madness started, that would have landed them in jail. Today, well, the government supports it. I mean, I don't know how much more of a clear picture you can get.
When she got off the school bus a few days ago, her father saw her and she was wearing a mask. Now, in my school district, we have an illegal mask mandate, but she was wearing a mask, even though under their own illegal mask mandates, rules she shouldn't have had to. But it wasn't enough that she was wearing a mask, because she's a special needs nonverbal Down syndrome child, who, by the way, 3 weeks earlier, the school district had called the parents and said, your daughter's taking her shoes off in school. Could you help us to make sure she keeps her shoes on? They were willing to call about that. When her father saw her get off the school bus, she was wearing a mask and it was tied around her head with nylon rope. The mask was full of saliva. The girl couldn't breathe. Father's furious. How could they do that to my daughter today? So he went to the school and he talked to the school and he found out they didn't do it that day. They had tied this mask around her face every single day for the previous 6 weeks.
Oh, my God.
Was in school. They just forgot to take it off that day before they sent her home. So when the parent said, what on earth were you thinking, to the teacher and to the principal, their answer was, the school board told us that our students all had to wear masks. There's a special place in hell for the three people who did this to this girl. This girl experienced real child abuse at the hands of the Brevard County School Board.
Exactly.
And I will tell you this, session, there's going to be hell to pay for the people who did that. Seeing no further business, Vice Chair.
I mean, good God. There's no words for how disgusting that is. The fact that she has saliva built up in this. I mean, they don't even care. Like, in fact, it almost feels like they're penalizing her for not wanting to wear it. Like she's a bad person for not doing so, despite the fact that she's special needs, nonverbal, right? How do you expect her to engage without being able? She's nonverbal. These people are criminals. Where are all the other people around that are going to say, well, that's disgusting. Oh, you're fired now because you don't toe the line. That's what's happening, right? All those people who would have otherwise spoken up are either scared into submission or fired and pushed off. Oh, you didn't get your injection? You're fired. So all that's left are the cowards and the meek, the feeble, the ones willing to go along with the you know, Nazi situation where they're following orders. Those are the people that are left, and that's not by accident. Remember that putting this kind of thing on somebody, forced masking, is literally torture. You can look it up in many different angles throughout history, but we'll do it to the special needs nonverbal child because the school board told us to. Or didn't even tell us to, simply told us that everyone has to. Now, how much you want to bet if they said, well, she's nonverbal, special needs, somebody would have been like, oh, well, that's okay. No, because they just go, well, that was our marching order. So now we're going to do it. This is a really bad situation that people are being forced into and being pushed away from. And the only people left are bad people in regard to these situations. I don't know how it could be any more clear. Now, on top of that, going back into the vaccination discussion, Sweden just suspended Moderna shot indefinitely after vax patients developed a crippling heart condition. Right, Sweden, that bad guy over there that's not doing what they're told. So we're going to ignore the fact that they're pointing out what we all know is actually happening, that we can't use these shots because they're making people come down with myocarditis and a litany of other problems that we're hiding from you. Rate of myocarditis, pericarditis for young males in Ontario after second shot stands out above the rest. 1 in 5,770. This is what we're being shown. It's probably exponentially worse. In fact, the data that we keep seeing, even from the CDC, shows you they're expecting something like 18 cases and they're being reported over 200, 300 cases. And yet acting like it still outweighs the risks. This is disgusting. The more this goes forward, I don't see how you can see it as anything other than sinister at some level, a willful disregard for what they obviously see is happening. Now, to make that point for you, a very important discussion that I want you to see that was just had between, I'm actually blanking on his name. Let me grab the video. Somebody that I want to try to reach out to and have on the show himself because he's doing great work on this. Let's see. I did. That's really interesting. I swear I had that. Hold on one second. Well, here it is. I'll just show you real quick. Anyway, Dr. John Campbell. Which, by the way, is quite interesting that he even has a check and he's got million subscribers, but he seems to be going after the narrative. So, I mean, nobody should be censored, especially him. I hope he's not, because look at his topics here. Ivermectin, vitamin D, natural immunity. I'm baffled. I don't understand why they would allow, you know, but anyway, the point is, this is exactly what we're talking about. So good for him for keeping it going. I didn't want to play it on this page. Now, what this is talking about is myocarditis. Myopericarditis and pericarditis. Ultimately, that's what it's called, really, both of them together when that happens. Oh, well, I don't want to download it right now, so we're going to play it right here. So this is really important. I want to play for you the first about 10 minutes of this. And I'm not going to really jump in as much as I have in the past. I want you to listen to his story and just hear what he's telling you. And this is a crazy story. This guy is a professional athlete, professional mountain biker, very, very fit, and is done. What's happening to him is disgusting, and what they told him in the hospital will make you sick.
So I'm a professor.
Oh, so he basically just asked him, give me the gist of the story before we get into it. And that's the first 10 minutes. So listen to what he has to say. He said, I'm a professional mountain bike rider.
Professional mountain bike racer. And I was vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine in June of 2021. That was my second dose. And I had a pretty bad adverse reaction. I was just kind of going through the timeline, telling people what my experience was, and then also sharing some resources for other vaccine injured people. Yeah. I'm actually going to be heading to Washington, D.C., in November 2nd, to go speak in front of, you know, politicians and try to just make a little difference in the support level for vaccine injured people. Yeah. And then also, you know, speak about vaccine mandates, because I believe where there is risk, there needs to be choice.
Yes. Good. Excellent. And of course, we're going to put links to all of that. So that's what this video is about. So take us back to the start of this, Carl. You're a famous mountain biker, aren't you? You've got a mountain biker. No, you are. You've got mountain bike websites You're in April, do all sorts of mountain bike stuff. So you're a really fit guy, basically.
Yeah, I was actually a professional racer for many years. I'm 29 years old, and I've been a professional racer since I was 18. Three-time North American Enduro Tour champion. So, like, you know, at a high level, it was my job for the past 10-plus years. And then it was really interesting because during COVID, all of the races got canceled in 2020. And so my girlfriend, April, she's like such a trooper. She loves learning new things. And she used to race motorcycles, motocross. And so we started a YouTube channel, and I just thought it'd be fun to upload some how-to videos to get people through the pandemic. And then it just took off. And so it grew from nothing to basically 250,000 in the past year. Yeah. Now that's kind of our full-time thing, is making videos and helping people learn.
No, that's great. I ride a bike about 2-3 times a week, but not as seriously as you. So it sounds like you're one of the fittest people on the planet before you had this difficulty. You're basically a professional athlete.
I was.
Yeah. Anyway, so you had the first Pfizer vaccine. When was that, Kyle? What's the timeline?
So that would have been the middle of May.
That would have been May.
Yeah, middle of May was my first dose, and everything went pretty normal. First dose, you know, had a sore arm the next couple of days, no big deal. And then our second dose was June 10th. The reason we had got vaccinated was, you know, to be able to travel with our channel this year. We were going to try to travel internationally and just meet up with a bunch of different friends and sponsors along the way. So it was kind of a must-have to travel at that point.
Exactly. Right. So this is what, right. Even remember in the number of fully vaccinated, they keep telling you, most people, and you're in the fringe, a huge portion of those people were like him. You know, like I keep telling you, that's the bulk of majority in this country. You've got the extremes on either side, then you've got the majorities. I would say probably 70% of people that are kind of going back and forth, voting for one person over here, one person over there. Sort of see both sides as an illusion, but they kind of just stay within it, right? They don't really, or a lot of them don't even care about politics. And eventually, you know, that's a lot of them. So when they got when their lifestyle got threatened, they, like him, they may have gone, I don't want to do this. And eventually they said, if my business is going to go away, I have to. So they bit the bullet and they did it. Then all of a sudden, now the media represents it as on their side, but that's not the truth. A lot of the people that, as Star points out, are coerced into it, a lot of them, are not on their side. They were forced or tricked or manipulated. And some of them may not care after that, but a lot of them are the ones going, I just got hurt. And then they're all, you're crazy. You're fake news. After they got forced into it, right? That's crazy to me that they just like they play with data everywhere else. Once you fall into that trap, you're now on their side. But that's not the truth.
June 10th was my second dose. My girlfriend April got vaccinated that same time, and she had, you know, same reaction as the first time with the sore arm. And then for me, it was a little bit interesting because as soon as they kind of injected it, I had a weird metallic or like saline taste in my mouth.
That's really interesting to me. I mean, that could mean a lot of things, but that is not normal.
Developed. And I kind of asked the guy, hey, is that normal? He's like, no, I don't really hear of that much. So it was really interesting. Like, I wonder what that was, you know? And then a day or two later, I didn't really develop the sore arm either. And so I was like, huh, this one's no big deal. I guess the second dose is a lot easier than the first. And then about 2 weeks later, I started to have some weird just kind of reactions with my heart.
2 weeks later. Right. Just hang out for 15 minutes. 2 weeks later, this is what we keep seeing. And a lot of them are 3 months later, 5 months later.
And so what was happening to me is throughout the day, I could just be standing there or sitting there. And I would just have these weird flushes of like really high heart rate and kind of almost like an anxiety attack.
How did you know your heart rate was high, Kyle? What happened?
I wear a Garmin watch. So I have like a Garmin watch. I track all of my sleep and everything. And so I was pretty on top of it, and I noticed my resting heart rate went from, you know, low 50s up to like 60-ish, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then my heart rate throughout the day when I would have those kind of moments, it was kind of in the 90s to 100, just sitting there, and that's not very normal for me. So I was pretty cognizant of it, and right away I just cut out all stimulants. So no caffeine, no, you know, tried to reduce everything just to cut out stimulants because I thought maybe there's just something weird happening. And then we actually – I took 2 weeks off completely of like riding, doing anything because I felt kind of crappy. And then we went for a bike ride about 2 weeks after that. And on the bike ride, started out normal. I was feeling a little bit kind of iffy, just lightheaded a little bit. And I went on the bike ride and my heart rate kind of went up on the start of a climb. We climbed for maybe 5 minutes. My heart rate got up to like 160 and then it wouldn't come down no matter what I did. And it just felt like I was going to throw up and I felt just really weak. And I was actually with a friend, his name's Bill, and he's in his 40s. And he just looked at me, he grabbed my shoulder. He's like, you're going to the hospital. You look like you're going to die. And so I was like, okay. So we were in Sun Valley, Idaho, which is 2 hours away from Boise. So we drove back to Boise. The whole time, those 2 hours, my heart rate never went below 135.
160 is crazy. Since I pause it because I want Richard in the chat to elaborate on why he thinks that's no good. I'm interested on what the metallic taste in your mouth might lead, what might suggest. I mean, I've noted that. I want to ask more from experts. I think I'm going to invite back on the show. But that's really interesting and alarming to me. And I love how the doctor's like, yeah, I never heard that before. Whatever. Just sit down and take your shot.
And it just stayed up for 2 hours, got home. I couldn't even really walk out of the car to like get dressed because we had biking clothes on. So I got dressed. I was at 150, 160 heart rate, just trying to walk around the house. And then I went to the hospital. And I told them, hey, I know this is weird. I just read about the, you know, myocarditis, pericarditis with the mRNA vaccines. I think I might be having this reaction. And they basically just said, no, you're not. Like he literally said, no, you're not. That's very rare. You're having an anxiety attack. Like I'll admit you, but you're not a priority right now. So I sat in the waiting room for like 3.5 hours, just sitting there, like holding my heart, like, oh, you know.
I can't believe that that's actually happening. I mean, if you wanted a better picture of how this has manipulated people that might be thinking they're doing the right thing, or maybe those are the examples of the bad people left after they push out the good moral people, that is disgusting. That guy went in there, and because he, like, doc, oh, you don't tell me what's going on. You have anxiety. Sit down. What do you mean you're not having that? This guy snap diagnoses somebody that comes in because, oh, that anti-vaxxer thinks he knows more than me. Sit down with your anxiety. We'll get to you after we deal with this person with a broken leg as your heart's about to explode. This is unreal. It could be that they don't care. It could be that they are tricked by the manipulation. It could be that, I mean, the reality is the gross misinformation stemming from the CDC and places like that are what are screwing this up. People like that may actually believe they know better. The doctors, right? In most cases, you would think they do. But in this case, this guy who did his own research knew more than that doctor in that moment, or at the very least knew was willing to consider more of the possible than this doctor is based on the real world data. They've admitted myocarditis is real and possible, but this doctor said the moment he heard it, no, that's not it. We already know that. Now, do you think he went in and looked into whether that was the case? Or do you think he just said, you're anxious, sit down and we'll deal with you in a second, and gave him some medication? What do you think?
This was a doctor, Kyle, was it? It was at the emergency room at a hospital in Boise called St. Alphonsus.
Yeah, and so it was a doctor that told you were having a panic attack.
Never go to St. Alphonsus. That's the moral of the story right there in this one part.
Yeah, exactly. And then I told him, hey, I'm not, you know, like I know my body, this isn't normal. Something's happening. And all the side effects I'm having are in correlation with the side effects I read about. Because I think the day prior to this big instance is when the World Health Organization did an official warning.
Exactly.
So I was kind of just paying attention to that, you know, and then I told him, hey, this is what's happening. He said, no, you're not. I was in the hospital for a few hours. They actually gave me a big shot of Toradol, which is an anti-inflammatory, because I was having like the reactive arthritis as well. And so he gave me a huge shot of Toradol.
Okay. So you're wrong. It's only an anxiety attack, but we're going to give you an anti-inflammatory? Now that's a really telling thing right there. So this seems to suggest that they are well aware this is a problem, but don't want to say that. Think about that.
And it brought everything down. And my heart rate went from like 130 to 110. And he pointed out the thing. He's like, look, you're doing better. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Still double your normal, isn't it? More than.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, my average heart rate is like 55 to 60. So this is double. I don't know what you're used to seeing, but this isn't normal for me. And he just told me, I'm going to recommend you to a psychiatrist. I think you're having a psychotic episode, and just sent me on my way.
Did you hear that? So we're going to give you something to deal with what you think is happening, but we're going to continue to tell you that you're actually crazy and you need to literally go see a psychiatrist when your heart's about to explode. I don't know how you even rationalize that. That doctor should lose their job. That's disgusting. Not because of anything other than the fact that they failed to do their job, which was find out what was really happening and consider that what he thought was happening based on his own research, based on what is possible, based on the symptoms that point to that exact problem, but chose not to.
He actually said it was psychotic.
Yeah, because he's like, he thought that I was imagining things and basically trying to be like anti-vax or conspiracy theorist because of the way that I just said, hey, I think this is vaccine related. And at that time, they hadn't seen any at that hospital yet.
I find that impossible to believe. I think that they're, I'm going to give you a point from James Lyons Weiler next. I mean, maybe, is that the next one? Let's see. Let me just jump to it real quick. Since it's the, did I miss it? Oh, wait, no, we'll come back. I forget where that point is. But James Lyons Weiler makes a great point in regard to, that is this right here. Okay, so here's his point. What's driving Pfizer's cardiomyopathy drug that's currently up 77%? Guess anyone? Possibly misdiagnosis of vaccine-induced myocarditis as transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy, perhaps? Myocarditis. This drug, cardiomyopathy, you know what that is? Chronic disease of the heart muscle. Well, isn't that interesting? And this was FDA approved on May 6, 2019, right before this all began. And it says announced today that the US FDA approved both of these drugs for the treatment of cardiomyopathy of wild type, and it says the same word that I'm not going to try to pronounce, to reduce cardiovascular mortality and cardiovascular-related hospitalization. Well, look at that. And now, suddenly, as if they knew what was going to happen, that drug is up 77%. Is it possible that they're maybe misdiagnosing that as the myocarditis as what this drug was made for? Certainly possible. So when they go, yeah, we haven't seen any of that thing that's associated with anti-vaccines, and they don't want to get near because they don't want to lose funding, and they want to, all the other things, well, we haven't seen a single case here. I find that impossible to believe.
My knowledge. And so they sent me home. I had a lot of people reach out to me because I had kind of shared, hey, this is what's going on with me. I got access to ivermectin and I started to take that right away just because I heard a lot of people say, hey, this might kind of hold the spike proteins hostage and just arrest the reaction that you're having.
You see, this is an example of like the study from MIT that showed you that anti-maskers, they called them, were by far more invested in the scientific method than the people that were challenging that, the idea, like forcing masks. You're over here saying masks don't work, and they did a study on the two sides, and they came back saying the people that were challenging the mask mandates were by far more invested in the scientific method. That's what he's showing you right there. This average guy, whether he's an athlete or not, decided to do his own investigation and is telling you things that are far more valid than what that doctor refused to even investigate. The fact that ivermectin does clearly have that effect. The fact that all these things he's continuing to talk about clearly have beneficial effects. And it worked for him. As they say, you're psychotic. Just go see a psychiatrist.
So I started taking that. It helped a lot. It like basically stopped my symptoms from getting worse. I didn't get a lot better, but it just like put a placeholder on it. And then I ended up in the hospital 4 days later for a second time. I went to a different hospital this time.
Yeah.
And exactly. I had a really, really strong squeeze on my heart. Like it just cramped and then just started burning kind of uncontrollably. And
quite severe pain you had?
Yeah, it was scary because we actually were trying to, it was the first time I'd been out of the house in a few days from that first ER visit. And we were at the grocery store and I was just trying to get a little bit of food. And I was like walking super slow and I grabbed some fruit and I was putting it in a bag. And then my heart cramped and I just like dropped everything and just grabbed it and was like, talked to April, my girlfriend, and said, hey, this isn't good. Like we're going to the hospital again. And yeah, this time they actually believed me and said, hey, it could be this, you know, this is possible. And let's investigate it as if it is this. And
so, oh, okay. So some real doctors. Fantastic.
So they referred me to a cardiologist and I was diagnosed with pericarditis. And also, I developed POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, as well as the reactive arthritis that I've been dealing with.
Well, that's fantastic. So this professional athlete is now ruined for life with arthritis. I mean, the bottom line is, guys, he was diagnosed with pericarditis. So he has it. That's been verified. So that doctor who said, you're crazy, go see a psychiatrist, should lose their job. I would love to know who that person's name is so we can call them out. That's just, you are a bad person who does not understand what's happening and should not be in that position because you're allowing politics, or rather your trust for authority, which makes you an ignorant person, to guide your practice. Do no harm except when COVID-19 happens.
So the arthritis,
so we're told,
just came on after the injection as well, did it?
Yeah, and it was weird because being a mountain biker, you know, I've had a lot of injuries and crashes over the years, and so it almost felt like all of my old injuries were reactivated. So I broke my SI joint a long time ago. Both sides of my SI joint were like excruciating pain. I couldn't even get up out of bed in the morning, and then both my ankles, both my wrists, like my wrists were so bad, I couldn't even put my seatbelt on. Wow. So I had to have April help me put my seatbelt on. And then it's gotten a little bit better over the past few weeks, but I've been supplementing with like some black seed oil. And that's what people have been telling me to really use, is the black seed oil kind of blocks the ACE2 receptors. So that's been helping a lot. And yeah, every time we just start throwing supplementation at it and try to really mitigate the spike protein reaction, which is what I believe is happening, then it really...
Nice, nice. Go, YouTube. Get it. It'll stay like this forever if I leave it. I have to refresh it. Hopefully it's still there. Oh, look at that. Gee, that's weird, isn't it? It's me, T-Lav. I'm not allowed to use their platform. Right there. Thanks for showing us that you broke yourselves, YouTube. You suck.
Supplementation at it and try to really mitigate the spike protein reaction, which is what I believe is happening. Then it really helps a lot, but I can overdo it so easy and just like relapse right away. So it's kind of scary.
So this started 10th of June, 2 weeks after that. So this is June, July, August, September, October. So 4 months now you've been really quite ill.
Yeah, 4 months. I haven't really been able to work as far as, you know, even doing videos and whatnot, because it's really interesting. But even like mental energy, if I have too much mental energy, so sitting and doing emails and stuff, I can actually relapse my physical reaction. So I think there's been 3 or 4 times where I've felt really great. And I kind of told April in the morning, like, oh, I think I'm better. And, you know, I get excited and then either I overdo it physically just by like running errands, or even if I try to like start editing a video or something, then the next day I'll just be kind of in pain for a few days and in bed again.
Oh, you're kind of wiped out with the effort.
Yeah. And it sucks that it's mental effort as well, because it's like, no matter what I try to do, even if I like read and I read too much of a book or something, the next day I'll just be like so drained. So I feel like very no, I just feel so worthless. And I told April, like, I'm so sorry that this happened so many times because we had all these plans and then, you know, this happened and I've basically just been kind of worthless for 4 months. But we are starting to get a little bit better, which I'm really excited about, especially once I started supplementing with the black seed oil. A woman from an organization called react19.org, she reached out to me after my video that I posted on YouTube. And she said, hey, thanks for sharing your story. These are the things that have been helping people that we know of so far. And that.
Now, I'll leave it there. You should watch the rest of it. But the point is, guys, this person, this professional, very exceptionally healthy athlete, took this because they was told he wouldn't be able to travel. Then because he took that, now he's not able to travel. See how that works out? He is struggling with things that will last the rest of his life, possibly. Right? We've seen this already. People that Del Bigtree's interviewed 7, 8, 9 months later, they're still struggling with the same seizures and the same problems. And they're pretending like it's a psychotic episode, just like that doctor did. He can't travel. He can't even think hard, or he struggles the next day. This is disgusting and it's wrong. And the bottom line is, as he said in the beginning, if there's risk, there should be choice. There's no reason that this would make any sense other than something else that's driving this. It is not about health, and it's very, very clear. Pericarditis, myopericarditis, which is both. This is very obvious and happening, and everyone's trying to hide this stuff. And he got cold crazy, even though he got diagnosed. Here's an example of something. As I said, don't forget that point that we just showed you, that they're misdiagnosing this, and their drugs are up 70%, as they're making new drugs that cover other things they're trying to hide from you. This is a power grab in every possible way. So what's this? This is a New York Times. Doctor's death after COVID vaccine is being investigated. Developed an unusual blood disorder. Okay, well, what's special about this one case out of the thousands reported? The same. Why are the hundreds of thousands of adverse events being reported dismissed without investigation, yet this one case suddenly is taken seriously? Well, I think the illusion of investigation. Right, so this guy can, no, you're fake news. You're crazy. Oh, I've got a blood disorder. No, you don't know what you're talking about. You're fake news. Here's 20,000 people. Oh, you're fake news. But this one guy we're going to suss out and talk about because we're doing our job. Meanwhile, New York Times will dismiss everything on Bayer's because it's all fake news. That's not real. Here's what's being dismissed as fake news. Flex Wheeler, fully vaccinated, in the hospital with kidney failure. Now, it could be something else. Or it could be the cause by what we're seeing it cause in everyone else, leading to the same breakdown of your immune system, the same breakdown of your body in a multitude of ways. Here's an example. Jeffrey Young, 45-year-old FBI special agent, dies less than 24 hours after receiving the Pfizer vaccine. Now, here's what's disgusting. You click on this link. What is it saying? It's saying that this person died 24 hours after taking this thing. Does it say he died from that? No, it doesn't. Did he die 24 hours after taking that injection? 100%. There's nothing even remotely misleading about that, other than the fact that they may suggest that it could be that. You can't have that, though, not in COVID clown world. So Twitter says it's misleading, and you're not allowed to like or share or comment. You can retweet it. You can't like or comment. Stifling the spread of a very factual thing. And as they put out, you know, F the Twitter warning. They're complicit in these deaths. Here's another example of her saying what's going on. Twitter thinks people shouldn't see or discuss this story told by the widow of this person. I mean, it just breaks your heart. These people got these things because they trusted the government, because they did what they were told they were supposed to do. And then they get injured, they die, and they're attacked. You're fake news. You try to talk about what happened to you, even in the proper context that they're telling you to do. You know, it didn't happen. We don't know for sure. And you still get censored. Listen to what she has to say.
You know, you won't hear me talking about this topic very often, just because it's not who I am. But last night I went to curriculum night at my kid's school, and I went alone because I'm a new widow, and that's just what you do. You go alone. So upon walking out of the school, I hear these people talking, you know, people are loud. I hear these people talking, and one woman has her hands on her hips and says, I just don't get it. I just don't understand why people just won't give up their arm and get the shots. Like, is it really that difficult? And immediately I wanted to vomit for a lot of reasons. But I'm here to tell you, I'm not anti-vax. I've never been an anti-vax person. I do believe in freedom. I do believe in our body, our choice. And I don't know where that whole thing went. Like, I thought for a long time it was my body, my choice, but I guess those things are gone. I think science is cool. Do I trust everything and all scientists? Absolutely not. My husband very much so believed in freedom so much that he went to work every day to support our freedoms and to fight for our freedoms. And you know what? He believed in, he trusted science. He went and got his shot. He did before he had to, before it was told that you have to go get this. He did. And he would giggle at me and tell me, Ona, you're being silly. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Millions of people are getting them and they're fine. We're going to be okay. Okay, so he took his shot. Took his shot. He got his first one. Within a couple hours, he didn't feel well. Went to sleep that night with a really, really bad headache. Told me he was fine. It was just a headache. I rubbed his feet. I gave him a wet washcloth. Filled his water. You know, checked on him a couple times when I heard him rustling around. He assured me he was fine. It was just a headache, a symptom of the shot or a side effect of the shot. Okay, about 5 hours later, after the last time I talked to him, I found him blue and dead in our bed with his arm hanging off the side of the bed. Okay, medical examiner has ruled it to be a coincidence, purely a coincidence. Science. Okay, I'm here to beg you, please, those that are fighting and speaking out against the mandates, please know that they are not doing it because they just don't want to give their arm for a shot. If we're told we have to do this, our freedoms are ripped from us. And you know what? Maybe some people who are leery of going and getting the shot, maybe it's because they know my husband. Maybe it's because they know one of the, I think it's what, 10,000 people right now that have died or been injured from the shots. Maybe it's because one of those people was somebody that they loved. Somebody that should not have been taken from our world so soon. So please have some compassion. And those that are making these mandates, I sure pray and hope that nobody that you love has been taken too soon, or the health of them has been taken too soon from science, from a shot that was made so quickly. And we're told just to trust. So please. Okay.
I don't know if I can handle much more of that. Right. You know, and if you care about her political affiliation, you're a disgusting human being. Let's just throw that out there. Okay. I'm glad you're just kidding. I take it back, Richard. So the point is that there are people like that, though. There are people out there that are don't care because they think, well, she's a Republican, so she's disgusting, or she's a Democrat, therefore she's wrong, or whatever it is. Who cares? That is nonpartisan. That's the point. They don't want you to see this. They don't want you to realize that it's thousands and tens of thousands of people that are being reported as dying after this happens. Or there are hundreds of thousands of adverse events that they don't want you to see, that they're pretending we don't know for sure. It's disgusting. The only reason they can rule this as an accident or coincidence is because they can't prove anything else. That does, if you can't prove that, if you don't know what led to it, you can't disprove, you can't discount that it was the injection. That, how can it be a coincidence if you don't know what caused the death? That's what this is. There's far more going on here than we were allowed to see, and it's disgusting. And as Star points out in the chat, a great point, like I've been saying about the rest of it, like even the discussion of the trans discussion, again, not to disparage on people that's their situation. You can do what you want. I support that. But how it became such an overwhelming political topic for a small percentage of the population is because I believe there's a reason they want you to be okay with altering your body for different reasons. Transhumanism, technocracy, that's a little far down the line. But to Star's point, is this not why they clearly leaned into cancel culture? So they can create the world where you can cancel people for not going along with the narrative? Yeah, that seems to make perfect sense to me. And if you don't believe they think like this, then you have not been paying attention. If people like this can be dismissed as crazy because they have something that's been proven to happen and they just don't even look into it, what else do you call that? Now, one final point on this that just blows me away. Remember that clip we played? There were 1.5 million tuberculosis deaths worldwide, I believe, in 2020. 1.5 million. Where was the tuberculosis pandemic? Right? When did that shut down? I guess that doesn't count, even though it can be dangerous and it can be contagious and so on. More cases by far, but there's nothing. Where was the panic? It's all politics. You see, you could make that out if you wanted it to be. Blend in a little flu and pneumonia, use a bad PCR test, boom, bang, you got a serious pandemic with even more deaths. But guess what? Now we're in 2021 and the global tuberculosis deaths are rising like they were before. But guess what? Now it's COVID's fault. Perfect. COVID. You can just blame it for everything. JFK information, COVID. COVID gets the blame. Now, guess what? How much you want to bet those tuberculosis deaths this next year get shoved into this too? This is how this is going to happen, guys. And it's all very clear and easy to see if you just pay attention. Just in, 100,000 NHS staff in the UK could be fired in the UK after they're telling you right now that they're soon requiring a compulsory COVID-19 vaccination. They're going to force this on people like they're already doing all over the world, despite everything we've talked about today. Now, here is an important point before we wrap it up with a couple points on Fauci and Build Back Better. I want to try to fly through this because I don't want to, we're already at 2.5 hours. Whatever. Almost trying to make it short. I'm going to jump over here real quick to our incognito window because it's the only way we can get YouTube. Oop, that's the wrong button. YouTube will not allow me to use all of their features unless they don't know it's me, which continues to show you what's really going on. But let's grab that incognito window. Here we go. There we are. Okay. Oh, that's right. Forgot that I didn't shrink it down because I'm neurotic and I don't like it to look weird. Okay, that's good enough. All right, so here we are with the first part. There's four different little plots I want you to hear on this. Now, this is Dr. Mobeen Saeed, 422,000 subscribers, 600,000 views on this video. He's apparently doing some interesting work. I haven't dug too deep into his channel, but this one video seems to suggest that he's at least open to considering alternative narratives than what the mainstream is spinning, which seems to suggest that he's objective to a degree. So this is interviewing Dr. Bruce Patterson, medical doctor, and the concept is that he apparently, according to this interview and the information they provide, which you can look up for yourself, has discovered the solution to what they're calling long haul. Now, as far as I can tell, this is the first sound argument of why there is something called long haul after COVID-19. I've heard that stated all over the place because of subjective observational things that they want you to think about. And I haven't seen any proven actual stuff outside of this that's saying that COVID-19, if you believe COVID-19 is there, I have no doubt. I mean, you can show clear examples of lasting things from the flu. So it's not hard to understand. All I've been saying so far is to say that there's nobody that can even prove that. And on top of that, we're barely in the time frame right now getting into where we could even begin to argue long haul. That being said, the reason I'm saying that is because this person is arguing they have a solution for that. But also that after the injection, they're seeing the same thing. Take a listen.
First question, what is long haul? So two questions here, actually. What is long haul? Are you seeing it after COVID? And are you seeing it after vaccine?
Boy, that's such a great question.
Oh, good.
You know, our big paper just came out last week in Frontiers in Immunology, and it really...
You know why I think that kept going? Because it's on an incognito window. That's just my opinion.
Set out who is a long hauler and what is a long hauler. And really the gist of the paper was that we used machine learning to look at a variety of different biomarkers. We started with probably over 100. We narrowed it down to 14. And then we used those 14 to see what the difference was were between long haulers, severe COVID, mild to moderate COVID, and normal individuals. And indeed, it was a very, very distinct set, 99% distinct from active COVID. And it was truly its own immunologic signature.
Now, my opinion would be if this is indeed what's happening, like this is indeed some lasting thing after what we're calling COVID-19. I mean, and you'll see more as he goes on to explain this. That seems to suggest to me there's something unnatural happening. Not just that it's lasting, but what he gets into, what it shows you. This seems to suggest, in the way he describes it, we're talking about spike protein lasting. Not only does that show you in the regard to the vaccine side of this, which you'll get into, that that's not just going away in your arm like they keep lying about, that it's lasting and continuing to stay or continue to be produced in your body, which is continuing to be a problem. So it shows that seems to, I mean, on top of that, ask yourself if the spike protein, as we know it is the main problem. Why are you injecting something that makes that in their body? How does that even make sense? So then it continues to be a problem in their body. So you're continuing the same problem with the same symptoms and the same. And remember, the spike protein can lead to disease in and of itself. Salk Institute. And as the inventor of mRNA or discoverer of mRNA said on himself and backed up with data, of course it can shed. So you can shed this to other people. They can catch it. They can spread it again. That's been verified by the data and peer-reviewed science. And the person that literally discovered this stuff. And they censored him quickly and then put it back because they realized, oh, we can't censor the guy that knows more than we do, which is pretty much what happens all the time. But that suggests to me that this is something interesting, like a bioweapon, possibly. Just something to consider.
And we developed a long hauler index so that we could quantify non-subjectively who is a long hauler from a diagnostic standpoint, and most importantly, monitor them on therapy. Because I know you know very well, Dr. Bean, when you talk to these individuals, their stories are completely different, and they have day-to-day variations, which we'll talk about in a moment. And to try and grasp any information in terms of recovery, treatment, how they're feeling, what they're feeling, and they've been debilitated for months on end. So what's the contribution of having...
All right, just in the interest of time, I'm going to leave it there. He circles back to kind of finish the point about both, but that was just more of the intro. Let's jump to the next part of this. Okay, good. I was going to say, if it's screwed up, I'll be mad. Okay, so now here's where we get into what they're showing you about post-vaccination, right? So what he's going to show you here is the fact that there's real, very clear data that shows you that people, after they get injected, who have never had COVID-19, are seeing the same things. This is a huge finding. You will not hear this on the mainstream media.
This has been such a key question out there in social media and from our patients, and that is the post-vaccination long haulers, or the people who have never had COVID, and 3 or 4 months after vaccination, they have long hauler symptoms.
Now, the only way that makes sense is to understand that what they're putting in your body with that injection is the same problem.
Well, I think we've enrolled 100 or maybe even close to 200 now. And we're starting to input the data into our machine learning algorithm. And we had fascinating results from the first 20 or 25 that we fed into the machine learning.
Always trying.
Where we saw a very heterogeneous group. There was one individual who was normal by the severity score, which we use in acute COVID, and negative by the long hauler score, which we use in long haulers. We found four individuals who had a inflammatory profile that looked a lot like COVID and severe active COVID.
Now that's really interesting, right? So you understand the red
are basically COVID-19. I find that to be really interesting. Something just froze. My mic just went crazy. Okay, so we're talking about the red ones basically looking like COVID-19. They are, I mean, you could literally argue that they are COVID-19, that they got it, or at the very least, the spike protein, which we know is the real problem, led to the same end result in a severe way. Or it's not, but it looks like it, and it might as well be called the same thing after a period of time, after they got the injection, they go, well, you got a breakthrough case. Or it just caused the same. I mean, it's just so silly that we're trying to even differentiate. I mean, if it's causing the same problem, same symptoms, same outcome, what are we discussing here? Now he goes on to the yellows, and those are simply what he basically says is long haul, but never had COVID-19. How is that not the clearest thing in the world?
Although it wasn't. And then the rest look exactly like long haulers from the long hauler index. So and then we went to a binary bioinformatics models. They all qualified as long haulers. So indeed, immunologically, they resemble very much like long haulers. We've treated them as such, and we've been very successful in treating them. So as much as it's a side effect of vaccines, I think it's not something to be too concerned about.
So he says, because we can treat them. That's it. Because we can treat them, don't worry about it. But what he's talking about from is a treatment standpoint. What we're talking about is, well, that looks like COVID-19. That looks like you're giving them something to fight COVID-19 and it gives them symptoms of COVID-19. If it ends up with the same problem, there's no conversation here. I don't care why would you give them something that could lead to, I mean, even if it's a small percentage, again, like the guy said, if there's risk, there should be choice.
It's treatable, it's not something that will stick for forever. So we're very pleased to take a look at that. So
that is excellent. I actually have a question.
Let me see if this is what 2215. Okay, next one.
There are people who invented ivermectin or discovered it, and now they're not, but there are people who are pushing it, like Dr. Pierre Curry. They are the people who are saving billions of people. Similarly, vaccines are actually saving billions as well. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about Dr. Bruce Patterson and his discovery. It is at the same level of saving billions of people because this misery, I can tell you, today, while talking with one of the patients, I was so angry. He has post-COVID long haul. And he himself is a research worker and a healthcare professional. And he goes to doctors. He knows them. He himself is a healthcare professional and he's a research worker. And he goes to doctors and they have no idea. And when he says we should try this or we should test that, they have no idea. And they have no, other than a few, they have no even interest. And I was becoming so angry to say, if this is what vaccines are going to do, and then we are going to break people and then we have no help for them, then what is really the help there? So once again, thank you very much for your work. I wish,
look at that. This expert clearly pointing out the problem. Well, if we're going to hurt people with injections and then have nothing to treat, like how about we just don't give them the damn injection then? Right? How about we just don't, we're looking one step over and saying, well, we have nothing to treat them after they have a problem from this. How about we just let them make their own choices? And I love how he points out that ivermectin is saving billions of people, right? These are experts that understand that the data is very, very clear that it does help. Of course, it could have problems like anything else, way less than we're seeing here that they're ignoring. But at the very least, if you're in a position where you have no other choice, or even if you want that to be your first choice, of course it should be used. Ivermectin or whatever else you want to talk about, as opposed to the one they're allowing, which seems to have lots of problems associated with it. clearly way more side effects and negative things that seem to lean into the very thing they're trying to accomplish. We'll talk about that more in a future show. But it's just unbelievable that we can have this pointed out by the experts leading the field in regard to trying to solve the problem that they're claiming. How about, here's another thought. How about the fact that the people who have their long haul issue that seems to be look exactly like the vaccine after effects, how about this only began about halfway through this year, right? So how about it's the spike protein shedding from people who got injected and they're catching that and then they think they have long haul. Certainly possible based on the data. Just a thought. See, there's lots of other possibilities here, and all they do is jam in what they want you to think. As always, they grab that microphone and they yell the truth, what they want you to think is the truth, long before the data even comes into play. Sort of like Trump said, China did it. It was all in China way before we even knew what was happening, and that never went away. Certainly could be, but as you know by now, I believe it was all of them together in a very clear manipulation of what was happening. Going to the next one.
Got it. So one more question. Post-vaccine, we established that this is happening to post-vaccine as well. How is the vaccine ending up causing this?
Well, that we're looking into. I mean, there's one thing that's that we see that's different from long COVID, and that is the elevations of vascular inflammation markers.
And quick point that they go over in the beginning, you should really watch this entire video. It's in a really interesting discussion that the vascular inflammation, I think is the word he used. Yeah, inflammation markers. This is what's leading to things that the other problems in your brain and elsewhere, as far as like that lead that you have like a migraine that actually, as even they were pointing out before, could actually be indicative of a blood clot or other things we're continuing to see. And that's a huge problem that they just pass off as normal side effects, or at least a marker for possible serious problems. Right, they talk about the fact that this leads to your blood-brain barrier, and this makes me consider the fact that in the beginning, when they were poking all the way up to your blood-brain barrier, and no one's explained why that was ever happening, and still seems to be in some cases, maybe they're looking for something. Maybe the people testing didn't even realize what they were looking for, and somebody had access to this to find out whether this was happening. Are we succeeding, or are we failing? Whatever you think that means. No one's ever explained to me why that ever had to happen. Just a thought.
Oh, the long hauler index, which I said is IL-2 plus interferon gamma over CCL4, that's elevated, which makes them, you know, in our book, a long hauler. But we don't see the elevations in VEGF, which is great because that causes peripheral neuropathy. I think it's responsible for the brain fog because it reflects, as I showed in my slide, you drew out. You know, those cells cross the blood-brain barrier and cause this fullness and VEGF expression there and vasodilatation, which, of course, is probably the heart of headache and migraines.
Apologies. I thought that wasn't a part that I didn't have on here. I should have just let him say it, but that's exactly what I was just talking about. You know, and the idea that he's talking about these problems as a long haul, but not after COVID, right? The brain fog. Like, that's what we keep hearing about, right? But that they're talking about COVID long. This is vaccine long haul. It's the exact same thing.
But we just don't see that. The most common pattern we see in post-vaccination.
I'm guessing he's saying that's not what we're seeing after post-vaccination. My apologies. Regardless, all the other things we're talking about are exactly the same. So same point. But I'll let it keep. This is only one more after this.
Long hauler symptoms is Ranty's CCL5 plus soluble CD40 ligand in addition to elevations in the long hauler index.
Got it. And one more time.
We're going to look in these monocytic subsets to see in the post-vaccination individuals if they're still harboring, you know, fragments of COVID protein, you know, 3 and 4 months after vaccination.
Well, there you go. Well, what do you know about that? Right. So now they're looking specifically for the spike protein to find out whether, I think that was the point that I was going to get to anyway on this next one. Yeah, there was. So they're looking for the spike protein 4 to 5 months after the, in the body, causing the same problem. Why? Because it's a no-brainer that it seems to be the same thing. His conclusion seems to be the same thing that I'm thinking, that it's actually the spike protein. Now, how would that happen? If you've never had COVID, you took the injection, and that's still in your body, leading to all these long hauls, well, obviously the spike protein goes from somewhere other than your shoulder. And obviously it lingers longer than the part that they tell you it does. You're being lied to. And we keep telling you this. Very interesting conversation that I really hope you will take the time to look into and listen to in full. Now, there's things in there that I disagree with, things that I, you know, that maybe I'm wrong about. But at the end of the day, this is the whole topic is showing you something that they just don't want you to see. Now, what's crazy is this will probably be discussed, you know, months down the line as breaking news, as they talk about what we told you, like it's been happening the entire time. But you heard it here. Talk about it, spread it out. Make sure people realize that long haul COVID is probably something else completely, probably part of the illusion that we're continuing to see. At the very least, it is happening to people who've never had COVID-19. You'll never hear that on the mainstream media. Now, to finish off, I want to point out a couple things about Fauci. As James Lyons Weiler is pointing out, he lied about the funding. He lied about the amount of funding. He lied about the definition of gain of function. The investigation will show he lied about the link between MMR vaccines and encephalopathy. Fauci is now a major liability to pharma. They will ditch him. Yeah, exactly. I agree with all that. I don't agree he's the only one involved. And I don't think that's what James was saying. I said they will. And I think that might have always been the plan, or at least the contingency now that he's clearly getting called out. Either way, it is quite clear that they are already throwing him under the bus. I've been pointing this out for weeks now, month. Which is why all the two-party illusionists, predominantly in this case on one side, will scream that he was the only one and he did it all, which is childishly naive. It's not just China and Fauci. It is everybody. I mean, I keep pointing this out. Now, yes, he does have a level of autonomy in his position, but all of these choices, especially internationally speaking, had to go through NIH. He's the head of NIAID, right? Collins, I believe at the time, was the head of NIH. Then you have HHS. At the time, it was, what was it still? I'm blanking on his name now, Mr. Bad Guy. I'm blanking on it all. Dang it. I've talked about it. Cadillac, Robert Cadillac. Regardless, the point is NIH is above what he's controlling. HHS is above all of them. The president, the executive branch, is over all of that. To pretend like he did all of this on his own while it was a publicly discussed conversation, while they were holding think tanks about what was happening, while they were working with EcoHealth Alliance and North Carolina University and all sorts of, that's stupid. I mean, just simply ridiculous to pretend he's the only one involved. But that's the point. That's what a scapegoat looks like. That's how you go, he did it, moving on, we're all good now, everything's back to normal. No, it's not. No, it's not. But you can see that he is being thrown under the bus. So as somebody pointed out to me today, my assistant, in fact, bipartisan legislators demand answers from Fauci on cruel puppy experiments. Remember when you saw us talk about this on the show? That's weird. They removed the image? That's weird. Yeah, there it is. Well, they had that image on there. I guess they decided to take it down because it was a little too serious. Remember this picture? You know where you saw this before, like a month ago on this show, because it was a breaking story that was covered, I believe, by a foreign news outlet that was, I think it was RT, speaking with somebody who was telling you they are conducting experiments that would gross things like this, where they're putting beagles incapacitated, but aware inside these things and letting sand mites eat at their ears. Yeah, that's totally okay doing that off the shores of the United States because it's totally acceptable. That's Fauci experimentation authorized by your government. Our investigators showed that Fauci's NIH division shipped part of almost $375,000 grant to the lab in Tunisia to drug beagles and lock their heads in a mesh cage and filled with hungry sandflies, so the insects could eat them alive. Right. So here's a couple things to think about. Why, if this has been out, if I talked about this a month ago, if this was reported that long ago, you need to realize that either shows you that they didn't want to discuss it until it was useful to them now because Fauci's getting thrown on the bus. They didn't know about it. And why would that be? probably because even the politicians who pretend they know everything are only just going along with what the mainstream tells them, which means they're not really in the know at all. And so they only saw this the moment the mainstream reported it. So then they cared. Now the legislators demand answers about something we already talked about a month ago. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this. It's the flow of information and the reality that these people that act like they're super in the know, you know, the talking heads in the mainstream media, even the politicians like the Nancy Pelosi's and Maxine Waters and all on both left and right, I'm just blanking on other names, all pretend they're super in the know. No, they are just as lost as everybody else who think they know what's going on to some degree. Some of them know a lot more. But this is coming out now. Despite it being basically public knowledge for long before he even told that out, pointed it out, because Fauci is going away, as if that's the only problem. That's my guess. We'll see what happens. But he lied about everything else as well, as we continue to see. Gain of function, even though that was a very clear example that I've been showing you long before it ever became breaking news, before Rand Paul ever pointed it out. Like, this is blatantly obvious information. That's not some new thing. It just becomes like, they admit it now, the thing we've always known that's been on the record. It's silly. It's really silly. As well as that we just discussed the fact that they've already changed, as of October 13th, the definition of gain of function. So now they can point back and be like, we were doing EPPP research, is what they call it now. So we didn't lie, except we altered the definition so we could pretend we didn't lie. Interesting, which is all leading into the future they're building for you under the guise of your health. So remember when they keep screaming build back better, as if that's an isolated thing to Biden's campaign or whatever they want to tell you? It's not. It's been around for a long time. Build back better, in fact, it was pointed out to me by Kitty Crusader, as well as the next person we'll show you, has actually been around since 2006. Guess who introduced it? Bill Clinton. I know, not very shocking at all. This is the PDF itself. Now we'll go through the information. Here's the actual study or discussion of it on Science Direct. Build Back Better approach to disaster recovery. Research trends since 2006. Oh, actually, excuse me. 2006 is what they're discussing. This was posted in 2020. What do you know about that? Almost like they were trying to push it in from somewhere else. Well, actually, let me make sure I got that. Okay, it was 2000. I take that back. So that's what I was going to have from before, but then I saw this and I was like, wait a minute, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, so this came out 2020, but they were still referencing something from 2006 that was put up by Bill Clinton. So here's what it says. This is really important. This was first introduced in 2006 by the United Nations Security General Special Envoy for Tsunami Recovery, former U.S. President Bill Clinton. In 2015, Build Back Better became the second half of priority 4 of the Sendai framework for disaster risk reduction from 2015 to, what do you know, 2030. Look at that, 2030. It's almost like it was the same plan from a different angle. Didn't work, so we scrapped it, came back somewhere else. 2030. This is not an accident, guys. This is what we're always talking about, how they drive something in and they test the waters. And sometimes we push back enough to where they go, okay, we'll stop it. But they don't stop it. They repackage it. They redress it. They gave it a new name and they shove it back out from a different angle and go, hey, fighting climate change. Hey, fighting COVID. Building a better world for technocracy, whatever it is. This is the same thing. Trying to reorganize what you believe you live in for their agenda. So Build Back Better has always been here. Now it's coming back at you from a different angle. Now here it is, here's the key propositions for Building Back Better by William J. Clinton. Read it for yourself. Now this is Jason Kishirf. Build Back Better was the name of the plan to turn disaster relief into a for-profit industry that was presented to the UN in 2006 by Special Envoy Bill Clinton. Was the name of the Clinton Foundation display in Haiti 1 year after the Clinton Foundation. Allowed their rich friends to loot Haitian earthquake relief money. We've talked about a lot. And also the fact that people like let's see if I can grab this real quick, since I'm mentioning this. A lot of people spoke out about how they stole from the Haiti, not just stole, took almost all of the relief money for Haiti, gave them a small percentage of it, if any, and stuffed their pockets, basically. And anybody who spoke out about this quietly disappeared, or not really quietly at all. And here's one of the articles I wrote myself. discussing this exact issue that was very clearly happening. Doctor who exposed Clinton Foundation corruption in Haiti found dead. Now, this is a horrific story because this guy was going, I've got all the goods. They gave nothing to these people. The people were suffering. They were dying. They were given goods that were broken and old and moldy and wrong and everything. And I'm going to tell everybody. And then he suddenly mysteriously died in a very suspicious way that was named suicide, of course, because that's how it always works out. Read the story for yourself. I'll include it. But the point is, he's right. After they looted all that money, now we're doing it again. What a coincidence, right? Now we're building back better again. Or maybe for the first time because they failed to do it the first time, but this is your future. And understand, if you still think this was Biden's tagline and it was just something he came up with and it was totally coincidence, like he actually continues to try to play to claim, even though that's the most childishly stupid thing I've ever seen because of what you're about to see if you haven't seen it. How is it just, it's just a coincidence that literally every government on his side is saying the same thing at a different, at the same time in their own way from a different angle?
Of course, we also want to work together on building back better.
You know, I said we're going to build back and we're going to build back better.
It's certainly a major crisis, but it also offers us a unique opportunity.
We must use this historical opportunity.
Together, we can turn a crisis into an opportunity.
But this global pandemic has also created an opportunity to build back better.
To build back better later.
But also to build back better.
To build back a better world.
Every country.
Better. We can't just build back, we gotta build back better.
And achieve the sustainable development goals.
Now that wasn't by accident. It's very clearly the stated concept of the World Economic Forum, of the WHO. Like, this is an open conversation. And yet Biden will stupidly go, oh, that was just something I came up with. You're all dumb idiots, and I'll claim that until you don't recognize. I mean, that, I don't understand how he can act. If you take that at face value without even doing the smallest amount of due diligence, you deserve that. I mean, because that's the kind of argument that frustrates me, because if you don't even care to look, you're allowing yourself to be fooled because you want to go along with a political agenda. I don't believe that's the majority of people. I believe that's a small percentage that's being presented as the majority, especially today. I've thought that long before this. Now, to finish the show, I'm going to play this last compilation. Thank you to Francesco about pharmaceutical fraud, because we know that's what's happening today, and it's always been happening. And even the mainstream media, because it was advantageous at the time to their agenda, was calling it out. But these companies are going to keep doing it unless we do something about it. They didn't do anything about it. And guess what, guys? They're doing it today. Exactly like they told you they would and didn't do anything about it. And now we're saying fake news, because now you're not allowed to call out the Pfizer, the pharma companies, just like you weren't allowed to call out Lockheed Martin and all the other munitions companies back when the war was the focus. Now the war is in your body. And now these guys you can't call out. That's fake news. So I'll leave you with this video. Thank you for tuning in today and being a part of this show. Oh, actually, I forgot, I wanted to show you one last thing in regard to Truth Clothing. I just want to give a shout out because they're also a company that's standing up for you and fighting for people like myself. Added a bunch of new stuff on the website. This is the one I was wearing today, right here. Vagabond. It's pretty cool. It's a cool design. Katie, who's one of the people behind this platform, she's behind all the designs. You know, I think it's just knocking it out of the park. A bunch of new question everythings, a bunch of new stuff on here. Check it out for yourself. All the proceeds go to help us and Truth Clothing. And anything else on the website you want to buy, type in the code Vagabond with capital V. I also get that also helps The Last American Vagabond. Now, leave you with this clip. Again, just want to say thank you for being here and continuing to stand up for us and stand up for people that are supporting you. There's never been a more important time to do so, guys. As I say, constantly have the courage to stand up for what you believe in. If you're one of those out there that's kind of concerned, I don't know what's happening, I don't want to speak up because I don't want to be cast out, I understand your apprehension. But this is not some passing fad. Now is the time to put it all on the line, guys. Now is the time to take that blind step, that faith, that step of the leap of faith is what I'm searching for there, to take that leap of faith and trust in your community, in the other people around you that are realizing there's a problem happening and they're standing up for you. Join them. Stand up for what you believe in, because now might be the last time you have the chance to do so. So thank you for being here. and continuing to fight for us. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Tonight, Keeping Drug Companies Honest, a story that's simply stunning about multi-million-dollar profits and illegal activity at this country's biggest drug company.
The Justice Department alleges Johnson & Johnson boosted sales by paying millions of dollars in kickbacks to pharmacists and doctors who pushed the drug Risperdal to patients who did not need it.
The medical editors of that journal accused the drug company Merck of misleading them about the dangers of Vioxx, of hiding the fact that it caused even more heart attacks than previously known.
Johnson & Johnson paid $2.2 billion. Eli Lilly paid $1.4 billion. Pfizer and its subsidiary paid $2.3 billion. And GlaxoSmithKline paid out a record $3 billion.
For 7 years, Glaxo failed to report data showing its best-selling diabetes drug, Avandia, increased the risk of heart attack by as much as 40%.
Opioid epidemic has killed more than 400,000 Americans. Tonight, Purdue agreeing to pay more than $8 billion in penalties.
Antidepressant Paxil wasn't approved for use by patients under 18. The company illegally marketed the drug for use by children, even when a clinical trial found teenagers who took the drug for depression were more likely to commit suicide than those taking a placebo.
Purdue Pharma pleading guilty to felony charges of defrauding federal health agencies and violating federal kickback laws for inducing doctors to prescribe those powerful opioids.
Glaxo also hired a company to write a medical journal article downplaying the risks. The firm used PR firms and paid several doctors, including the U.S. celebrity doctor, Drew Pinsky, to promote the drug.
If you can't trust medical research that gets published in very established journals, what can you trust?
But as Bob Orr reports, the massive settlement may not lead to much change.
Is fraud the business model of the pharmaceutical industry?
No one's going to jail. No one's going to prison. And worse yet, they've set up a situation where Purdue's going to be able to continue on.
You look at this thing, and I mean, if Pfizer is too big to fail, and even the biggest fine in history is just a few months' profit, then what's going to stop it from illegally promoting other drugs?
Critics say, Anderson, nothing.